independent employee, the utility manager, and this was conducted pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. We did hear an update, but there was no reportable action taken. We did discuss three items of litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9A. This is the Los Osos Community Service District versus Chevron. This is what's commonly known as the MTBE case. We did hear an update from legal counsel, but again, no reportable action was taken. We did discuss the Cal Cities Water Company versus the Regional Water Quality Control Board. The district is a party to that litigation. Again, we heard an update from legal counsel on the status of the pleadings, but took no reportable action. And then finally, the Los Osos Community Service District versus Cal Cities et al. This is the lawsuit regarding the groundwater basin. We did hear an update from legal counsel, but the board took no reportable action. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz. We'll now start the first of two public hearings. And the first public hearing is on adopting an ordinance establishing guidelines for the AB 706 loan program. Mr. Buell.
Thank you, Mr. President. This evening is the second reading and consideration of adopting the ordinance establishing the guidelines for Assembly Bill 706 loan program. That's the program that we're proposing to use to help finance lateral installations and septic tank decommissionings on private property. Your board did review the text of the draft ordinance on March 4th. At that time, you voted on a couple of edits. Those have been incorporated into both the revised ordinance and the program description that's attached. There are copies of this staff note on the back table if anybody wants to follow along. This program arose out of special legislation that was adopted by the California legislature last year. That was Assembly Bill 706 of 2003. The bill says, in part, the Los Osos Community Services District may, consistent with Section 61613, borrow money from public or private lenders and loan these funds to property owners within the district. We've developed a protocol. What we're proposing in the ordinance is to enable the district to borrow money from banks and the other financial institutions and have a line of credit that would be drawn down as property owners sought to fund their improvements on their property. These improvements include laterals, septic tank decommissioning, grinder pumps, and related permit and landscape repair cost. The loan would be repaid through the property tax roll. The property taxes are collected twice a year by San Luis Obispo County, and in this county we have the advantage bills for the property in question. The program's available to owners at all income levels. And unlike some of the other programs that are offered by other vendors, the homeowner need not be an owner-occupant. They can also be a landlord and take advantage of this program. The program would work through an application process. Property owners would apply directly to the district. We would require that a contract be executed with a contractor to execute the work. We would check the ownership on the title and the tax delinquency, but if those are both positive, the loan would be approved. After the contractor completes the work, the district would reimburse that work, and we would set up the repayment schedule, again, through a collection on the property tax roll. The term of the loan would be 5 years,
And this program would be available from July 2004 through the end of 2006. Ultimate repayment of the loan would potentially occur through the end of 2012. So this evening, what we are requesting is board consideration of the final ordinance. You have met your reading requirements. So it is a question as to whether you want to adopt the attached ordinance or not. If you desire further edits in the text of the ordinance, staff requests that you continue this item so that we can start the process over and make those edits for subsequent hearings before the board. I do want to emphasize that that this ordinance enables a process. We will come back to your board with specifics once we have recommended a bank or financial institution to you, and we will propose the details of the program in the form of a resolution at that time.
And, Mr. Buell, this program, of course, is voluntary. This is nothing that members of the community have to do. It's strictly voluntary if they want to avail themselves of what we think will be cheap money. So,
yes, and I also want to note that this is one of many programs that we're developing and working on. We want the property owners to have a wide variety of choices that they can pick from to best suit their particular needs.
Thank you. Any board comment, questions? Public comment on this item?
Good evening. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. At your March 4th meeting, I and two other speakers spoke in a tandem of 9 minutes about this ordinance, speaking in opposition to this ordinance on March the 4th. Nothing could be further from the truth. We were merely trying to raise concerns on a number of different levels. Please listen closely as I try once again. Number one, explain the differences between private and public lender. Mr. Buell has stated at past meetings that the district will be receiving proposals from local banks. Banks are not private lenders and are governed by a strict set of regulations. Any wording regarding private lenders should be stricken from this ordinance also. Number two, at your last meeting, a sample loan repayment schedule was provided on the back table. It shows that the biannual payment would be, if a prohibition zone property owner borrowed, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, or even $4,000 from the district. What it does not show is what portion of each loan amount is composed of district administrative costs and all related loan fees to the borrower. Repayment of a $3,000 loan would require a borrower to set aside approximately $57 per month for 5 years. Add that to monthly operation and maintenance, bond and state revolving fund repayments, water rates, and possibly special fire tax increases, and then justify not earmarking the STAG grant for the benefit of the most needed in our community.
Next.
Jerry Walsh. A board member stated at your last meeting that it would be nice if this program benefited a family of four with unexpected medical bills to pay. Yes, it would be nice if the not yet established guidelines for this program were fashioned in a way to ensure that those most in need are served first. Owners of more than one property probably enjoy a higher net worth and therefore should not have access to this cheap money before a retired teacher on a fixed income or the family of four with never-ending medical bills to pay. Words like moderate, low, and very low income are used to describe those who may not qualify for other programs. Why are you not defining high and very high income households and why they should not benefit from this program? Let's make sure our neighbors who do not qualify for other assistance programs due to age, ability to repay, or lack of total fund dollars available are given first shot at this program. To do that, you should establish a tiered income guideline to ensure that the lowest income households, the lowest household income category is given every opportunity at this, according to Mr. Buell, cheap money, before making any remaining funds available to the next tier on the household income scale. The lowest household income category will also have the hardest time repaying these loans and monthly sewer fees, so let's give them priority before anyone else. Properly written, this ordinance could guarantee its intended goals, helping those in need. What ordinance section addressed
to bring down prices, but to reap the benefit of the time constraint driven pricing? Be concerned for the common good, not the common greed. This ordinance does not address the fact that in some cases you may be lending funds and securing those funds by recording a first priority special tax lien on a property that may already be mortgaged to the max. What are the legal ramifications, even though the district would be the first in first position, if the local real estate market stabilizes or drops during sewer construction and foreclosure proceedings are undertaken on a property with zero or negative equity? Lenders currently holding second mortgages may not be thrilled with the bump to the third position in the event of foreclosure. Verifying that property tax are paid current does not equate to the homeowner's ability to repay these loans through higher biannual tax payment in the future. What you basically have created is a program that invites anyone with property tax paid current to fill out an application, submit a work to be done contract, and the district will lend you the money to connect to the sewer, whether you are truly are in need or not, and have the ability to repay or not, and actually live in the prohibition zone or just own property in the prohibition zone. What staff position will be created to administer this program for the district, and what level of lending experience will be required? This is not a bookkeeping position. Because of the legal disclosure and right to privacy requirement knowledge needed on a daily basis, at a minimum, this is a full-time position during the construction phase of this project. Thank you.
Mr. Barrow.
Good evening. My name is Al Barrow, and I live in Los Osos. I'm an affordable housing advocate, and I've seen you take one step forward on affordability and five steps backward over and over and over again. You know, it's just... It's the reality. The reality is that the people that are going to be borrowing this money are paying $16 a month for their assessment payback. I submit to you that they should probably not hook up at all. Then they wouldn't have to borrow any of the money for the hookup. They wouldn't have to pay for the sewage fee, and they wouldn't have to pay back the state funds unless, as Mrs. Bowker said in the last closed CSD meeting, the water board can be made to force them to hook up. I think also that Jerry Walsh is absolutely correct in her assessment that if it is designed or touted to be for affordability, why should it be available to wealthy people? Thank you.
Any additional public comment? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Any board questions? Director Bowker.
As soon as I can get this thing to stop ticking. I think there's going to... Is this on? Okay. I think that there'll be plenty of opportunity to talk about procedures and guidelines. This is an enabling ordinance. It's not going to be a wide breadth of opportunities for financing property owner needs, and this is just one of them. if people are concerned about the timing for the lateral connections, that's something that they should be taking up with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And if, in fact, the time frame for connecting is unrealistic, we aren't the ones that have the authority to determine what that is. And it's the regional board that needs to review it, review the probability of being able to accomplish it in a regional time frame and deciding what is reasonable.
Director LeGros.
Yes, at this time I'd like to make the motion to adopt this ordinance as written and order its publication.
We have a second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? I have two points to make. Number one, again, it's a voluntary program. You can come to borrow the money or not. And the second thing is, as Director Bowker said, Section 10 covers the administration and directs that the District Board of Directors establish by resolution, which means you will come back to an open public meeting have the implementing a part of the program, which is where we get into the minutia, and then we'll have all the same discussions, and it will be back here, and we'll have a chance to go through it at that point. We need to know, for example, what the interest rates are going to be and what the program is with the lending institutions before we can actually put any hard dollars numbers to it. With that, Director Freiler.
I'd like to ask Mr. Buell whether there is a cap on the amount of money that is out there that would preclude anybody that was interested in securing such a loan from getting one?
That would depend on the individual bank that was selected, but the banks we've talked to indicate that that they see this as a very good program, and that especially with the TEETER program backing it, they'd be as happy to lend as much as the community wants to borrow.
So we're not expecting to, if certain people request money first, that people in the later hookup areas could be caught short, that there should be enough loan money to satisfy everybody's needs if they want to.
Yes, that is our expectation.
Thank you.
I mean, you want to move the question, Director Freiler?
I'll call for the question, yes.
All in favor say aye.
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 It's a roll call vote.
Thank you. Please.
Director LeGros.
Yes.
Director Bowker.
Yes.
Director Freiler.
Yes.
President Gustafson.
Yes. Okay, we'll go to agenda item B. This is the use of the $200,000 federal grant money. Mr. Buell.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your board initiated a discussion at your February 11th special meeting regarding possible uses of the $200,000 of the federal appropriation approved in last fiscal year. Is that it be contributed to the low-income assistance fund. So that's that. This evening, at this public hearing, it is our hope that individuals from the community will share their views with your board, and following closure of that feedback, staff's request is that you set an item on the agenda for April 1 to develop the board's proposed response.
Thank you, Mr. Buell. Board comment? Public comment?
I just want to support all the people that wrote letters. My name is Al Barrow, by the way. Excuse me. Sent letters to suggest that this money be put into the low-income assistance fund. I understand it's a STAG, is that right, STAG grant? So state tribal assistance grant. Seems like Indians are our lowest income people, so it seems to me that you ought to try to encourage Native Americans to take advantage of this as well. So it should go into the low income assistance fund.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow.
Okay.
Jerry Walsh, I will only give three reasons why this grant should go to the Low Income Assistance Fund. First, a question and answer in your February 18th most frequently asked questions handout reads as follows. Question, will there be any source of assistance for folks who cannot afford the monthly sewer, cost of the monthly sewer? Answer, yes. LOCSD, in partnership with the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation, is developing a low-income assistance program to help pay for the costs of installing laterals and ongoing monthly costs. How far does this board feel the approximately $15,000 balance in this fund will go to alleviating the financial hardship awaiting many in the community? Second, the $200,000 Community Development Block Grant could be reduced by up to 20% for administrative fees. Mr. Buell has stated in the past a range from 11.5% to 18% to administer this program. I hope 11.5% is the final number, which would still amount to $23,000 off the top. And third, I have heard comments that using this grant for low-income assistance may be discriminatory and could bring a lawsuit down upon this district if not used to reduce the overall cost of the project. In this case, $200,000 divided by 5,000 homes equates to only $40 per household. How could anyone even think of denying $40 to those most in need? Thank you.
Good evening, Lindy O. and Los Osos. I have a first question. Is this is an appropriations bill. It was signed by the president. When it comes out to 1,600 homes that don't have enough money to pay for a project that you couldn't keep reasonably priced. The cost of laterals has gone from $900 to $4,000 as an estimate, has jumped up now to $1,400 to $4,500 per lateral as a rough estimate. So basically, if you take that money and divide it into 200,000 to help those people with either the full cost of their lateral, you're probably only going to be helping maybe 20 people. So I think it needs to go to low-income people, but I don't think we should advertise it a whole lot till we know if we have the money. Thank you.
Mr. Buell, do you have a question, an answer on the appropriations, the significance of it, and when do we get the check?
Well, I think it's incredibly significant that we're a federally appropriated project. We believe this is the first year of several years of appropriations. Mr. President, you and I talked to Peter Carlson this morning, and we heard what I thought was very good news, is that it's apparent that a WERDA bill will move this year. And that we're likely to be in the cut for the authorization phase of the funding. In regard to when we get the money, there is a process. Your board does need to determine your proposed use of the money. We need to submit that to the EPA, and only after the EPA is satisfied will we get the check. The money is there. We need to follow this process to get to a point where we can draw it down.
And there was also another question regarding laterals, and the statement was made that it's now looks like the range is from 1,400 as a low to upwards of, what, 4,000, I believe? 4,500. Do we still have an estimate in terms of what the lateral cost
possibly is? That's consistent with what we mailed out to the property owners before the 2001 vote. At that time, we estimated the one-time cost of decommissioning the septic system was $400, and the cost to install the lateral was $995 to $4,093. This is the same information that we provided to the community for the past 3 years. So there's no surprise. There's no change here.
Thank you. Mrs. Tacker.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker. I'm a bit confused. I thought we were going to have the money. I'm a novice to this process, and I'm sorry. I thought you had it. I hoped that this president's signature was going to be almost like having his signature on a check. But I know it's a grant, and I thought the grants came with strings attached. And I wondered, what are the strings, and what are your restrictions? I know that you're waiting for a procedures packet, and I wondered if you've seen it or it's been delivered. And then I was happy to read the letters that are in your board packet from the community members that took the time to let you know what they're feeling. You had two requests specifically to move the sewer, and of the 12, now 13 letters of the Low Income Assistance Fund, one said move the sewer, and of the Habitat Conservation, another said move the sewer. So I think the message is clear. You need to move the sewer. Thank you.
Hi, this is Lisa Shaker. Excuse me. I just had a couple of questions about the $200,000 grant. We received a letter from HUD. I understand this was HUD tribal assistance money. The task force, Los Osos Technical Task Force, received a letter from HUD saying it's not their money. They don't have any money in this project. And I was kind of interested of how the money got to EPA if it was supposed to be HUD tribal assistance money. But EPA has jurisdiction over the money. And then because the money is federal funds, I've asked this question before, and I'm still concerned about what are the NEPA requirements, the National Environmental Policy Act requirements for using this money. And I think that will affect your decision about how you use the money. I wanted to know who the contact was at EPA that you're expecting the procedures packet from. And then these are questions about Mr. Buell's comments. I don't know what a WERDA bill is. That's an acronym I don't know. And I don't know what he meant by we have to follow this process. So I don't know what this process is that he's referring to. And those are my questions and comments. Thank you.
Thank you. WERDA's Water Resources Development Act. And Mr. Buell, if you would comment on where the money came from, and are there any NEPA requirements on it, to your knowledge?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. The appropriations package for HUD and VA does include the funding for EPA, and this particular portion of the EPA funding, the state tribal assistance grant, is administered out of San Francisco, Ferrari, administered out of the Region 9 office, EPA office in San Francisco. Contact is Cheryl McGovern. Again, we don't have the full packet. My discussions to date indicate that we need to propose a use. We need to show EPA how that use is consistent with the dictates of the STAG appropriation, and then the other processes are outlined in the packet, which we don't have yet.
Thank you, Mr. Buell. Any additional public comment? Can I bring this item back to the board? Board comment? Director Bowker.
One of the things we learned with fundraising for the Elfin Forest was you really need a starter grant. And once you have some money in the kitty, then it's possible to go after matching funds from other sources. The $15,000, if you add in the $200,000 grant, this will probably help us to raise additional funding for low-income assistance by showing that the total funding available has been increased by this grant of $200,000.
Thank you. Any additional comment? I do have a question. Yeah, I do have a question for Mr. Seitz. Are there any legal restrictions on specific uses to any one group over the entire community?
You know, I won't know the answer to that until I see the guidelines.
Director LeGros.
We are discussing the date to make this determination. What dates are we talking about we're being asked to set a date to make the determine what dates are we looking at?
Well, actually, what we're requesting is you set a date to talk about what your board's priority is for your proposed use of the money. Again, we need to tell EPA what we're proposing to use the money for so they can make their determinations.
Okay, at that date, will we have the guidelines so we can discuss this all?
No, but we could wait. Your board could set this at your first meeting in April, second meeting in April, first meeting in May, or you could tell us to bring it back to you once we do have the guidelines.
That's important.
Yeah, I think it's very important that we know what the guidelines are, because if there are some restrictions in terms of how we can use it, then that'll change the determination, I would think. So,
in the meanwhile, though, I encourage the public to come and tell us during the meetings where they would prefer the money to go, because we're still trying to determine what to do with it.
Right. Director Bowker.
I would urge whatever you can do to get them as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. Again, because if it is, we need to know if we can put it in the low-income assistance fund, and if that's an allowable use, then the sooner that it's officially designated for that, the better for other funding opportunities.
So is it going to be better to set a near-term date, or do we have any estimate in terms of when we can get that?
No, we've had several discussions with EPA, and their situation is that there were so many earmarks, they're overwhelmed. So it's not like they're trying to avoid providing the guidelines to us. They just don't have the staff to get them out as quickly as they'd like to. My recommendation is that you tell staff to bring this back as soon as you can get guidelines that will provide a clear picture of what your options are.
Okay. Director LeGros.
Are these requirements tailor-made for each community, or are they kind of standard for everybody? Because if they're standard, we can go ask community that received past monies to see what their guidelines were, at least as a starting point.
Yeah, that's a good starting point. This is no community in the United States has received a packet for this year's appropriation. Right. And the problem is, we won't know officially what everything is in the packet until we get it.
And they sometimes change.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Is there a consensus on this? Do you need any more than just the...
Mr. Chairman, board members, staff, and public, my name is Bill Kirsch. I'm with the South Bay Fire Department. On Friday, March 12th, at approximately 8:28 a.m., the Sheriff's Office received a 911 call reporting an oven fire at Daisy Hill Mobile Home Park, and we were dispatched a minute later at 8:29. The first engine arrived in approximately 3 minutes, and they found fire had fully involved the mobile home with heavy smoke and flames shooting out the windows. Captain Reese, who was on the first engine, immediately called for a third alarm and for mutual aid from the city of Morro Bay. Fortunately, we were having a meeting at the fire station with all the off-duty people, so we were able to man three engines very quickly and a rescue squad from our department. And also an engine from Morro Bay responded, so we had approximately 20 people on the scene. We made an aggressive interior attack and stopped the fire from spreading to any neighboring homes. The resident that was home, Dorothy Rampey, had safely evacuated the building to wait for the firefighters after calling 911. Her husband, who was not home, was notified and rushed home to be with his wife. The fire was contained in about 20 minutes. The mobile home and its contents suffered major damage. I'm sure the mobile home's a total loss. And smoke damage, but we were able to recover some personal belongings for the Rampies. St. Louis Ambulance and the Sheriff's Office also responded to provide assistance. assistance. Fortunately, there was no injuries to either firefighters or the public. The Red Cross arrived to offer assistance to the Rempe family. The cause of the fire has been determined to be in, it was electrical in nature, starting in a light fixture. If you have any questions or anything I can add.
Board, have any questions? Thank you, Captain Kirscher.
Sure. You're welcome.
Okay, at this time, we're going to take approximately five-minute recess to allow members of the public to submit their speaker cards. And while we're doing that, we can have – there have been continued questions on odor control, so we'll run the odor control PowerPoint during the recess. And we'll call you back as soon to session as soon as the PowerPoint's over.
Hello. Good. You're looking very bright. Ah, yes. Well,
okay, if we can kind of come back to order and go ahead and now is a time in the meeting where we have public comments for items not on the agenda. And the first three speakers will be Gwen Taylor, Vivian McNeil, and Lisa Schicker.
Good evening. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. Since I'm sure Mr. Buell will not be reading this letter to the editor from last week's Bay News, I thought I would. It's titled CSD Board is Out of Touch. I'm reading this verbatim. It reads, I am watching the Los Osos Community Service District meeting live on TV tonight. Julie Tacker and Jerry Walsh have had their 3 minutes to speak, and I applaud them. It's people like them who really make this community. When Ms. Walsh said her piece, CSD Board Member Frank Freiler had the audacity to say she was out of touch. Out of touch? Mr. Freiler, you are out of touch. In fact, the whole CSD seems to be out of touch with this community. The people of Los Osos do not want the sewer in the middle of town. Don't you get it? That's the end of the letter. Please tell us again how out of touch we are and how certain representatives don't want to hear from their constituency. Why, Stan, would you condone such a statement and be concerned that a letter-writing campaign not directed by you may have repercussions for this community? Thank you.
Vivian McNeil, followed by Lisa Schicker and Lindy Owen.
The second is that I'm a member of the LOCAC Elections Committee. The applications for the position are available at the CSD office. There is a map that shows how Los Osos is divided into the four districts, in case you don't know what district you live in, so you can check there. The applications need to be returned prior to the start of the LOCAC meeting on March the 25th. The elections will be held May 1st and the 8th, those are Saturdays, at the South Bay Fire Department. We sign boards are going up tomorrow, or the sandwich boards, with information. And after the nominations are closed, then there will be those information will change, and we will have signs and flyers throughout the town. Thank you.
Thank you. Lisa Schicker, followed by Lindy Owen and Julie Tacker.
Hi, everybody. My name is Lisa Schicker again. I live in Los Osos. I'm here tonight to represent the Los Osos Technical Task Force. And for the new listeners that might be in the audience or on television, we're a group of professionals, engineers, biologists, archaeologists, scientists who are interested in presenting facts that we have found about the wastewater treatment plant as designed. We have some serious concerns that we introduced in letters to the board on February 5th, and we are still anxiously awaiting to hear from the board regarding our concerns. And we have a website, and we have a post box 7091 if anybody would like to write us or share their information. I noticed that Mr. Hensley is not here again tonight, and I'm concerned about that. He is one of our environmental board members, and he was chairing the environmental committee meeting that happened last week. There's some big decisions coming out of that committee tonight, and he's not here to discuss them. He was the chair of that meeting, and I would have had some questions and comments from him, and I wish he was here. I miss his presence tonight. Another comment has to do with the comments I've made several times about the agenda. It's a real simple request, but the agenda still doesn't designate whether you're going to do reports or not on all of those items, and that would really help those of us in the audience. Excuse me. And my final comment has to do with something that the Los Osos Technical Task Force did bring up in their letters and did come up at the Environmental Committee meetings last week again, and that has to do with the issue of sole source contracting. This is a practice that your board does quite a bit, and for those of us who are used to spending public money, it seems a little strange that you use this practice so much. Yeah, we've suggested that it may be fiscally irresponsible to use sole source contracting so much because you're not using the processes, especially when you're using federal and state money. There are processes that are in place, and we don't believe that you should be using this so much. A typical process would be requests for proposals, statement of qualifications, the CSD writing the proposals and scopes for work, receiving bids or proposals from many consultants instead of one. And we would like to see you use less of sole source contracting and provide more
than his own meeting. This is his town. This is what he chose to run for. And then I also wanted to talk a little bit to what Lisa Shuker spoke about, and I was extremely disturbed when going to the Environmental Review Committee and finding out that the sole source bidding is common practice. And when several of us asked Mr. Buell, he said that that is within his purview and it is in the bylaws. So would you please tell the community that your bylaws do not require that the open bid process be followed unless Mr. Buell chooses to do so? This board has consistently chosen the sole source bid procedure. This basically means that RCSD general manager can choose to give contracts of any amount to anyone he chooses to without shopping around or getting an idea what the going rate might be. Please explain how this policy relates to your responsibility to be fiscally responsible to Los Osos taxpayers and citizens. And thirdly, LOCAC does have a large election coming up. They'll be choosing 8 new members, 2 from 4 different districts. We really encourage people to get involved in this community. It needs new blood. And this is a great way to start. It takes it's one meeting every month. It's not really difficult. You need to be concerned about your community and what happens with growth and the future changes. All the information is at the CSD office. You can read about what the job, what the time requirements might be and job requirements, and put in an application. The elections will be at the end of the month, actually the 1st and the 8th of May. But we need to have your applications in by March 25th, 7 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you. The last two speakers talked about sole source contracting. I wonder if, Mr. Buell, if you can, and perhaps Mr. Seitz can comment on that.
Thank you, Mr. President. The district does use competitive processes. We generally use a competitive process to pick a professional consultant, and once that professional consultant has proved their mettle, then your board has considered negotiated proposals with that same firm to do subsequent work. This evening on your agenda, you have 2 such requests, and you will be addressing those later. Your
purchasing policies do allow for that, and we have followed those policies. We believe that it is cost-effective and prudent to find a good consultant and use that consultant because they have the expertise to zero in on the work.
And they then also have the knowledge of the project and the community at the same time. Julie Tacker, followed by Jerry Walsh, and then Keith Swanson. Mrs. Tacker.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. Just quickly, before I want to get into my prepared remarks, I wanted to encourage the community to write Mr. Buell at P.O. Box 6064-93412 to Fallow Non-Prime Agricultural Land, 32 acres, outside of town. Inside this packet that I provided to the to the Coastal Commissioners, I have a copy of this week's Sun Bulletin viewpoint. It is my viewpoint, and it highlights some of the costs associated with putting a sewer plant in the middle of one's town. And then I provided a page out of the Environmental Impact Report. This page is the mitigation page, Bio 16. This says that you will prepare HCP prior to coastal development permit application. Your habitat conservation plan is some years away, and it is integral to the Estero Area Plan, which is also years away from completion. And you have already submitted your coastal development permit application and received approval from the county agencies, and those have been appealed. I also included Table 8-4 from the environmental document that says the environmentally superior alternative treatment site is Andre. The last thing that my packet provides is Table 4-4, the life cycle cost comparison between Tri-W and Andre. Andre is less expensive over the life of the sewer. Out of town. I will give this to you. I will put this on my website, our website. Concerned Citizens of Los Osos has a website, is cclososos.com, and I encourage the community to go there, read it, call me if they have questions. I'm happy to talk to anybody in the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Tacker. And I understand you're giving public testimony up there for an item that a month before the hearing is going to be scheduled.
It was not on their agenda, and I am allowed that in public comment.
I understand. And Director Groh?
Yes, Mr. Buell, in regards to the due date for our HCP, when we must have it in place and implemented, I believe the speaker was incorrect as to the timing as to when we had to have that in place. Could you please explain yet again what exactly is the due date for the HCP completion?
The coastal permit issued by the Board of Supervisors calls for the HCP to be implemented before we hook up any new development. They don't provide a fixed date for that.
So the HCP completion will not prevent our construction of a wastewater project?
That is correct.
Okay, so it's that new development on vacant property will not be allowed to hook up until we have the HCP in
operation.
That
is correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Jerry Walsh, followed by Keith Swanson, followed by June Wright.
Jerry Walsh, this comment is in relation to the letter-writing campaign that we have had. Stan, many times you have vehemently quoted Senator Feinstein's office as saying not to write any more letters to her.
Yes, and in terms of vehemence, I don't think it was vehemence. I think that's an incorrect use of the term. In terms of when we were told, yes, it was 3 years ago, and that was pretty clear, and it was also pretty clear at the time. And I also said, I hope it works. I mean, I really do. Like, we are trying to do everything we can to get funds, and if it works, that'd be great. Keith Swanson, followed by June Wright, followed by Al Barrow.
Keith Swanson, Los Osos. Good evening, board, staff, and viewing public. It appears the location of the sewer plant will not be changed by the CSD board or staff. It appears the design is complete and the bids are out. It appears the loans, grants, and the bond are essentially in place. Some may think the fight to move the sewer is over. Think again. It has just begun. Unfortunately, the CSD has chosen to ignore the hundreds of people who have moved the sewer signs in their yards. The CSD has chosen to ignore the people who recently wrote 1,000 letters to our government for additional funding for this project. The CSD has chosen to ignore the people who signed the petition to the Coastal Commission. The CSD has chosen to ignore the people who attended the Board of Supervisors meeting. The CSD has chosen to ignore the people who supported our right to speak for 3 minutes. The CSD has chosen to ignore the people who attended these meetings in support of moving the sewer. Los Osos has shown their endless compassion in many fundraisers for those in need. The people of this community have shown they will show up in force to do the right thing. I admire this community's commitment to do what's right. We are at a critical time. The town needs to show the CSD and the Coastal Commission we, the people, have the ultimate power to move the sewer. Soon, every resident will receive a flyer. I ask everyone to place this flyer on the refrigerator, bulletin board, or wherever you post things to remind of this upcoming event. On Saturday, April 3rd, at 3 p.m. at the schoolhouse at the Los Osos Community Park, we will take a community photograph of all of those who want to move the sewer. Please tell everyone, your friends, your neighbors, your family, to take 30 minutes of your day and your life to drive, ride, or walk to the little schoolhouse on Saturday, April 3rd at 3 p.m. for 30 minutes. I urge everyone in this community to spend a mere 30 minutes to show you want to move the sewer and have your picture taken to prove it. Please bring your Move the Sewer signs. This community photograph will show once and for all to the CSD and the Coastal Commission we want the location of the sewer changed. I plead that you please take 30 minutes of your life to save this community forever. It is the most important 30 minutes in this town will ever have. It is the people who will move this sewer. This town has shown its will before, and this town's will can move this sewer. Please be a part of the most important event this town will ever see. This is your last chance. A community photograph is your chance to be heard without saying a word. We can move this sewer, and you, the residents of Los Osos, have the power to do it. Thank you.
Mr. Swanson. June Wright, George, that'll be enough, please. June Wright, Albert.
Planes to carry passengers was the old tri-motor. Yet how many of those do you see in the air today? Yes, planes have also evolved into today's turboprops and jetliners. So why is it so difficult to understand that modern technology has also evolved the old-time sewer plant into today's wastewater treatment facility? No longer an open-smelling eyesore to be avoided at all cost, but a 21st-century enclosed facility with odor control. We no longer have enough land to stick to the old ways out of town. What has happened is that towns then spread out to the facility and complaints pour in. Look at what is happening to airports. People move near them, then complain. And the Andre site? There are three churches in the vicinity, and at the cemetery, religious services are also conducted. So using that means there doesn't have to be any odor control? Go figure. I can't. According to an item in the Tribune, in Oslo, Norway, they are even offering their new facility for birthday parties, wedding receptions, etc. Let's get this facility built and get on with other community problems. Let's live in the 21st century and not keep looking back at the 20th century. Thank you.
Thank you. Al Barrow, followed by Chuck Cicina, followed by Joe Asire.
My name is Al Barrow. I live in Los Osos, and I hope everybody will attend this Saturday, April 3rd, for the 3 p.m. photo shoot. I can recall when I stood up before you in the spring of 2000 and 2000, when you, the fall and the winter, when you dumped the original ponding plan, partial sewering of the community, and stood pretty much alone. And now there's 800 or more signs that say move the sewer out on the street. There's been an overwhelming move against your project as you have it now. People are concerned. There are many concerns. Professionals concerned. It's not just a flake named Al Barrow. Okay? So I'd like to say some things. I'd like to say your engineer said in the last meeting, from the beginning of the start of the plant, that it will violate the permit. That's what the engineer said. They would violate the permit from the very beginning, the start of the plant, and that they would go to the board, of the regional board. I heard him say it. I asked him to repeat it, and he said it. And that's one point I want to make, is this is far from a perfect plan. Violating the plan from the beginning seems to me to make no sense at all. Violating the permit at all doesn't make any sense. The plan's designed to fail from the beginning. Competitive bidding. I just speak to that and say that communities do competitive bidding to save the community money. The grand jury looked at competitive bidding on a $15,000 contract in Cambria for waste, solid waste, and they recommended to the board that they not do sole source bidding because it would benefit the community to have competitive bidding. They would save money. The sewer is cheaper out of town according to the project report and the final EIR. That's been stated before, but I'll say it again. Your concern about affordability are hollow. Mr. Hensley was quoted in a recent meeting that we should have sued the regional board for making us drop an alternative pond system, that we had made a mistake by not suing the board. And I submit to John Seitz that you should still sue the regional board, just as Cal Cities has done so. And I would like to announce that there's going to be a grand jury investigation of the wastewater treatment project, as well as the CSD.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow.
You're welcome. Thank you for investigating me.
Chuck Cicina, followed by Joe Asire, followed by Steve Sawyer.
Mr. President and fellow board members, so that we have the most up-to-date information, I'd like to know that, Chuck Cicina, Los Osos resident. I'd like to know if you ever updated Table 4-4 from the project report whenever you put out an addendum to the EIR, because that life cycle cost table is a tough one to get past. I'd also like to make one comment about the HCP as it relates to your coastal development permit and your CEQA document. It may be that the county-approved CDP said that you only had to have the HCP in place by the time you hooked up to the sewer system, but there was also a requirement that you comply with CEQA, and that means that you abide by the mitigation measures that you spelled out in your EIR. One of them, Bio 16, was that the HCP would be complete before you submitted a CDP application. You're violating CEQA, it seems to me, and I don't know how the application was ever accepted. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Beasley, you want to answer that question regarding the CEQA question? And I think there was another question regarding life cycle that perhaps Mr. Hyland can address when it comes time for the project report update. Mr. Beal.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have published a final environmental impact report. It did require that we develop a habitat conservation plan prior to submitting our HCP, our coastal development permit. We did have a draft of the HCP before we submitted the coastal development permit application.
Thank you.
Mr. Esire, Steve Sawyer, and Laura Brown.
Good evening, Mr. President, board members, and staff. My name is Joe Esire. I live in Los Osos. I've lived here since 1969, and this evening I would like to speak on the Measure G, the fire tax that's going to be coming up in May 4th. I believe that's the date that the ballots will be counted. I have been asked to serve as chairman of a citizens committee to get this measure out to the public so that they can understand what the issue is. As I said, I lived here in the community since 1969. I was here in 1981 when the special tax was passed to make the fire district better than average. That money now needs to be adjusted so that we can continue to have a fire service that is above average. And so I am here to ask that the community understand that issue and ask for the support and get this measure passed so that our community can have a fire service that is equal to none. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Sawyer, followed by Laura Brown.
Steve Sawyer, Los Osos. I, too, would like a fire department that's above average, but I'm not willing to write a blank check for that service. I want to know how much it's going to cost. I have a lot of things that I want to talk about before this election, but at the last meeting, I got up and for a couple of seconds during my public comment, I talked about ISO ratings and fire insurance rates. And when I was finished speaking, again, the board attempted to discredit me and convince the community I didn't know what I was talking about. So I did a little bit more research into ISO ratings. I feel the need to talk about this tonight instead of what I really want to talk about. But this is just another example of how this board is misleading the public. On numerous occasions at previous meetings, June Wright, a member of the public, got up and spoke about fire insurance rates and how they would go up if we don't pass this fire tax. No time did the board correct anything that she said in those regards. The truth is there are three different categories that make up an ISO rating. One is communications, the receiving and handling of alarms. The other is our water system, and the third is the fire department itself, its personnel and its equipment. Of the three categories, the water system has the highest score, and that's contrary to what Stan Gustafson stated at the last meeting. Of the three categories, the fire department itself has the lowest score, and that's what is driving our ISO rating down and raising our fire insurance rates. The point here is, when June Wright made a mistake, no one corrected her. When I got up and brought it up, the entire board jumped on it and tried to discredit me. And you were wrong, and it's right here in the Citygate report, section 2, page 9. This is a report you paid for and came from your fire department. If we want to talk about level of service, ISO ratings, I'm suggesting we look at San Luis City Fire. You want to talk about a better department? They can do it. You want to talk about better insurance rates? They can do it. What I want to know is how much it's going to cost for all the options before this election, and you failed not to look at those until after. If you want some more information, I am the chairman of noonfiretax.org. You can go to that website. If you would like to help out, you can contact me at 534-2803 or through the website. Thank you.
Thank you. Laura Brown.
Good evening. My name is Laura Brown. Tonight, I live in Los Osos. Tonight, I would like to read a couple of letters that have been sent to the Yes on G committee. Actually, one was sent to the committee, and one was in the newspaper. To explain why I am most definitely in favor of a yes vote on G, I would like to recount my own experience with the Los Osos paramedics some years ago. Very early on an October morning in 1978, I awoke feeling unwell, but not really able to pinpoint any specific symptoms. After debating for some time about what I should do, I was finally convinced by my husband to let him call the paramedics. When they arrived a short time later, I apologized for calling them out so early for an unspecified and probably unimportant reason. And one nice young paramedic reassured me by saying, "That's okay, ma'am, that's what we're here for." That is my last memory of that morning. Apparently, immediately after that, I went into cardiac arrest. My husband tells me that they immediately gave me CPR to restart my heart and then continued to give me CPR several times on the way to the hospital. At that time, the ambulance crew was part of the paramedic unit. My heart was finally stabilized by the emergency personnel at Sierra Vista Hospital, and I was in ICU for several days before being moved to an intermediate cardiac unit. When I was finally discharged from the hospital, I thanked my doctor for saving my life. He looked at me and said, "Don't thank me, thank the paramedics. They're the ones who saved your life." To say that I am grateful to them for giving me these last 26 years of life would be a gross understatement. Actually, that event caused us to decide to remain in Los Osos rather than move to another nearby town which might not be served by such an outstanding unit. I feel that I and others in the community who may at some time need them owe them every bit of support we can give them, and I, for one, am more than willing to contribute whatever the department needs, not only to thank them for saving my life, but to enable them to continue to do their outstanding humanitarian work. It seems such a small price for such heroic work. Elizabeth Holben of Los Osos. I'm going to skip the letter to the editor, but there was a very nice one that was in there from Martha and Leon Golden thanking the paramedics for their quick response recently. I just want to say that this fire tax issue is a very serious problem and a consideration for our community, and only by the community working together can we take care of this problem. Mr. Sawyer asked, "What is it going to cost?" It's going to cost an average family home $7 more a month or 34 cents a day. And I don't think that price is too much to pay for having outstanding paramedic fire response right here in our community. So I urge you to vote yes on G.
Thank you, Mrs. Brown. Okay, seeing no further public comment, we'll move into administrative and committee reports. There was one item that I would like Mr. Hyland to comment on. Beside the one I mentioned, there was a statement made about that the project would be violating permits right from the very beginning. And perhaps you could just briefly touch on that when it gets to your time. In terms of oral administrative reports, the first report we will see will be from LOCAC. Is there a representative from LOCAC here? Well, we'll move on to item B, report from South Bay Community Center. Is it Don?
Don Pickrell, South Bay Community Center. Good evening, Mr. President, Board, residents of Los Osos. Well, Saturday before last, we had an outstanding annual dinner and fundraiser. It was certainly successful for the community center, and I would guess from the loud noise and poppers going off that the attendees had a good time, too. We raised almost $11,000, which was badly needed for the community center to keep the center going and to update the facilities. Certainly a few people I would like to thank: our chair, Jack Green, who is a member of the board, MC Peter Starlings, the head chef, Aubrey Doro, the board volunteers, the ticket sellers, and of course all the donors and the people who turned out to make sure it was a good time. Now we're getting prepared for our next event, the Taste of South Bay, that's being chaired by Jim Godfrey, and he's really been working the last few months to make sure that it's going to be just a blowout year this year. We probably will have more wineries and restaurants than ever before. He's already signed up Don Lambreth and the band Usonia Jazz, a jazz singer, to perform while we were here. So we're really looking forward to that, and that will be June 8th. The other things will be the ongoing things that we have going on here, classes in Shotokan Karate and Pilates. And again, we want to really thank the members of the community who showed up, who helped, and really made it a successful evening for us here that night. Thank you.
Any board comments?
I like the flowers in the restroom.
Marilyn's been working hard on that one and improving. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pickerell. The next report will be from District Legal Counsel, Mr. Seitz.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience. I was asked some time ago to look into the possibility of providing lifeline rates for sewer service, and I thought I would make this report to the board and to the community. This is not going to be a report that I'd like to give because my conclusions are that basically the board cannot tier its rates for Lifeline. Now, when I'm talking about Lifeline rates, I'm talking about a special tiered rate for low income ratepayers for the sewer project. And the basis for my conclusion is found in a case, but more importantly, it's Article 13 of the California Constitution. When the voters approved Prop 13, which became Article 13, part of that clause says is that your rates and charges must bear a reasonable relationship to the services or regulatory activity for which the fee is charged. Otherwise, this is categorized as a special tax. So the issue is that the other payers that are not on the Lifeline would be paying a proportionately higher rate than would actually be, they'd actually be receiving from the services provided. It is possible there is one exception to that rule, and that's basically based on water rates and charges because there's another provision in the California Constitution, which is Article 10, which has to do with a declaration regarding water resources the state be put to the most beneficial use and to the fullest extent to which they are capable. So it is possible to tier water rates based on Article 10 of the California Constitution to address conservation. But I cannot find any authority that would allow us, or a district, or any local agency, or any governmental agency, for that matter, to specifically tier service rates to address low income. So that's the conclusions that I've reached on that issue. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Board, have any questions? Receive quotes from letters received.
None, Mr. President.
The next item would be responses to letters to the editor.
None, Mr. President.
Spring cleanup. Mr. Boykin.
Good evening, Mr. President, board, staff, audience, and viewing audience at home. Sam Boykin, Site Waste Coordinator for LOCSD. Our first event this year is happening April 24 and 25. I do want to point out that the spring cleanup does not replace a number of weeks of trash pickup. And identification will be required at this time because last year was overwhelmed by, I think, everyone from the area and also out of the area. And this is an excellent time to clear your property of unused items and assist your elderly neighbors to clean up their property. If you need assistance from the CSD and volunteers, please call the CSD, my office, at 528-9435 by April 21 at 5 p.m. We will not receive any calls after this time, you definitely have to drop it off. And our drop-off place will be on Fairchild Way. We ask you to come to take San Inez to Fairchild Way. It'll be a one-way street exit back onto Los Olivos Avenue. And please do not drop anything off before that time because the box will not be there. We will not start putting the boxes out until early Saturday morning. We have to hope to have this done by 8 p.m. And it will not be like it was last year. We did have a problem with the boxes. And we would accept no hazardous material. If you have anything hazardous, please call 1-800-400-0811. And they're located on Atascadero Avenue in Morro Bay, right down the street from the Morro Bay High School. Also, Mission Country is having a cleanup, weekly cleanup on a daily garbage pickup. And this is only for single family residents. It'll take 12 combination of bundles, bags, or cans. However, you must call Mission Country by 3 p.m. on April 2nd because they close down the machine at the communication at 4 p.m. And Mission Country title number is 528-7430. And I have put some flyers on the back table of the cleanup and also a Mission Country weekly cleanup. Questions, please.
Board, do you have any questions? No? Thank you very much, Mr. Boykin.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Highland, the monthly update.
Mr. President, members of the board, staff, and the public, before I begin my monthly status report, I would like to touch on the comment that was made earlier about violations at the wastewater treatment facility. Last week at the special board meeting, we had a discussion about the startup of the wastewater treatment system. And the issue that we were discussing was the fact that when we are ready to start accepting wastewater at the treatment facility, that the connections from the private residences will not immediately kick in overnight. There's going to be a gradual period in which all these connections are going to be made. And so in the early weeks of operation, flow is going to be trickling into the treatment plant. And I indicated that this would be the most difficult time for us to provide treatment at the facility. I am very confident that we will provide full treatment. The one area that I expressed concern about, that we may have some risk, again, in the early stages of operation until we get our biological system acclimated, is the nitrogen removal at the treatment system. As you know, the most restrictive requirement we have is to meet the total nitrogen standard of 7 milligrams per liter, which is less than the drinking water standard of 10 milligrams per liter. And to achieve this, we need a biological population in our biological system, in our aeration basin denitrification system, that can meet this requirement wherein the microbiology converts the nitrates in the water to nitrogen gas. So I expressed a concern, again, in the early days of operation until we get the acclimation of our biology, it may be that we would exceed the total nitrogen standard of 10 milligrams per liter or 7 milligrams per liter. I'm not necessarily convinced that's going to happen. I think it's possible. I have discussed this issue with the regional board, and they recognize that there will be an acclimation period, and they'll work with the district to make sure. So there should not be any inference, though, in any of this that violations at the treatment plant are going to be endemic or continue for the life of the plant. There's in no way, shape, or form is that going to happen.
And this is not an unusual event on the startup of the plant?
Not at all. This is common to all new treatment facilities. There has to be an acclimation period to get it up and running and meeting all requirements.
Thank you for clarifying that, okay. Mr. Highland.
Now I'd like to start on the monthly status report. This is the 16th report of our final design services. This covers our period from January 31st to February 27. We delivered our final documents for area construction to the printer on February 10th. We delivered our final documents for the wastewater treatment facility to the printer on December 17th. The final printing of the documents was completed the week of February 22nd, and they began distribution to builders' exchanges and plan rooms at that time. And then we advertised the project starting March 1st. We conducted a meeting on February 3rd to review some appeals to the pre-qualification determination that we had made previously in December. There were four companies that appealed the determination. Of these, there were three companies where they were instated as being pre-qualified based on supplemental information they provided, and one company that was still denied the appeal. On February 21st, Mr. Buell and I attended a meeting with Leo Sarmiento and his staff at the State Water Resources Control Board in Sacramento to review the status of our SRF loan. We've continued to conduct negotiations with the district with regard to our contract coming up for engineering services during construction and our construction management services. On February 25th, Mr. Miller and I attended a meeting with Richard Marshall of the County Public Works Department to review the requirements for the Ravenna extension and the Los Osos Valley Road improvements nearby the wastewater treatment plant. I also conducted a meeting on February 18th with the assistance, supporting John L. Wallace and Associates, where we met with Bob Engel of Engel & Gray to review sludge disposal requirements. And we also met on February 25th with the Air Pollution Control District staff of the county to review their requirements. That concludes the major activities that we conducted during that month. I'd be glad to answer any questions the board may have.
Any board comment? Director Fryler?
Steve, I would like you to say this one more time, real slow and real loud, and that is it'll take days for biology to be established. Only days, not weeks, not months, days. Is that correct?
That's correct. I would estimate that within a period of 5 to 10 days, the biology will be up and running, and we will be running in full compliance with all discharge requirements.
Thank you.
Any further board comment? Thank you, Mr. Hyland.
You're welcome.
Mr. Buell, action by the State Infrastructure Bank.
Did you want to hear from Mr. Miller briefly?
Well, I was going to save the best for last, but since Mr. Miller is on as item H, district engineer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate that. Members of the board, just a brief update in terms of our analysis of Montgomery Watson's performance. Given the obviously the size of the effort and the aggressiveness of the schedule, they've done admirably, and they did deliver both the area work and the treatment plan on time. They continued to operate within their assigned budget for those tasks, and it was a very good effort, and now those documents are on the street and ready for bids. So we're satisfied with their performance, and we'll continue to monitor it over time. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Moving on. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Moving on to Infrastructure Bank.
Mr. President, the State Economic and Infrastructure Development Bank was scheduled to meet on March 16. They were unable to get a quorum, and they have continued that session until April, and we believe we'll be on the April agenda
assuming that they can overcome their problem with the quorum.
Thank you. Okay, staff response to the Los Osos Task Force submittals. Mr. Seitz.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience. I thought today that I would review some of the CEQA issues that have been at least raised during public comment. Before I start, I would like just to go through two definitions that I will be using during this special part of my presentation. One is I'll be using the word CEQA, that's spelled C-E-Q-A, and that stands for the California Environmental Quality Act. The other one is I might be using the word EIR, which stands for Environmental Impact Report. And I might be using DEIR, although I'll try to refrain from doing that, which stands for Draft Environmental Impact Report. But probably the one that I will not avoid will be the word CEQA, which again stands for the California Environmental Quality Act. Now, to begin, the CEQA process is used to determine whether the project may have a significant adverse effect on the environment. CEQA guidelines define a significant effect on the environment as a substantial or potentially substantial adverse change in any of the physical conditions within the area affected by the project, including land, air, water, minerals, flora, fauna, ambient noise, and objects of historic or aesthetic significance. When reviewing a project under CEQA, a lead agency such as the Los Osos Community Service District has three basic choices depending on what they find. A, if no potential significant effects are identified, a negative declaration is prepared. A mitigated negative declaration is called for if there are potential effects, but these effects can be mitigated to a level of insignificance. And lastly, an environmental impact report is required if there are significant environmental effects which cannot be avoided or mitigated. The purpose of an environmental impact report is to provide state and local agencies and the general public with information on the potentially significant environmental effects which a proposed project is likely to have, and to list the ways that significant environmental effects may be minimized and indicate alternatives to the project. The standard for requiring environmental review at an initial stage of the project under CEQA is fairly stringent. CEQA requires the preparation of an EIR whenever a project may have, and the word there is may have a significant effect on the environment. A lot of times in this context, you probably hear the fair argument test, which would require an environmental impact report. A final environmental impact report generally consists of a draft environmental impact report, comments and recommendations received, consultations with other public agencies, and public review, written responses by lead agencies, than any other additional information. Now, when we processed the wastewater treatment plant project, this is a draft environmental impact report that was circulated. This document is the final environmental impact report, which contains the comments and the revisions to the draft environmental impact report to address those comments. I was the attorney during this process, and I can tell you that there were numerous public hearings, not only at the board, but there was also a standing environmental review committee that conducted many public meetings at its own, and not only arriving at the draft environmental impact report, but the final environmental impact report. Now, what you're going to get from here is a legal analysis of what this all means to the public and to the project. As a general rule, once an environmental impact report is completed, that decision is protected because there are concerns or legislative history regarding finality of the environmental review process and its inherent presumption of correctness. Again, once an environmental impact report is certified, there is a shift in policy considerations that govern environmental reviews that are related to project changes. The low threshold for requiring an environmental impact report in the first instance is no longer applicable because in-depth review has already occurred at the time, and challenges to the sufficiency of the original environmental impact report have long since expired. That is the case with the environmental impact report that was processed for the project. Once the results of an environmental review process have been achieved, the interest of finality by the courts are favored over further public comment. Now, CEQA Guideline 15162 provides the general requirements for subsequent environmental impact reports. And this has several categories. When an environmental impact report has been certified for a project, no subsequent EIR shall be prepared for that project unless the lead agency determines on the basis of substantial evidence in light of the whole of the record one or more of the following. One, substantial changes are proposed in the project which require major revisions to the previous EIR due to involvement of new significant environmental effects or a substantial increase in the severity of previously identified significant effects. The second category of changes. Substantial changes occur with respect to the circumstances under which the project is undertaken, which will require major revisions of the previous EIR due to the involvement of new significant environmental effects or a substantial increase in the severity of previously identified significant effects. Or three, new information of substantial importance, which was not known and could not have been known with the exercise of reasonable diligence at the time the previous EIR was certified as complete, and shows any of the following. One, the project will have one or more significant effects not discussed in the previous environmental impact report. Or, significant effects previously examined will be substantially more severe than those in the previous environmental impact report. Or, mitigation measures or alternatives previously found not to be feasible would in fact be feasible. Now, CEQA Guideline 15164 articulates when addendums can be used. And this is the process that the district used regarding the last project modifications. I think the board will recall and the public will recall that part of the project process was to go through value engineering. And the value engineering identified many changes, I shouldn't say many, some changes. And again, there were some other changes between 30% design, if I get this wrong, Steve can correct me, 50% design. That were developed through the project. And what the district did at that time was that they hired their environmental consultants to evaluate those changes. And then under Guideline 15164, which provides a lead agency or responsible agency shall prepare an addendum to a previously certified environmental impact report if some changes or additions are necessary, but none of the conditions of Section 15162 calling for the preparation of a subsequent EIR have occurred. Now, and that's exactly the process and the findings that the board made in adopting the changes to the project as a result of the value engineering and from 30% to 60% design. We did file a notice of determination. The challenge period to the filing of the addendum has long since passed. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, board questions? Thank you, Mr. Seitz. Mr. Buell, would you like to preview the April 5 non-board meeting regarding odor technology?
Thank you, Mr. President. These are also on the back table. It's a flyer announcing that on Monday, April 5 at 7 p.m. at the Sunnyside School Auditorium,
We're going to provide a evening dedicated to discussing odor control, and specifically odor control through biotechnology. We have Grover Wright, who is a recognized expert on odor control and is currently the wastewater treatment supervisor for the city of Vacaville, who operates odor control facilities. So we want to encourage and invite the community to attend. This will not be a board meeting, but Mr. Wright will be happy to present his analysis of our odor control strategy and to answer questions from the community regarding those odor control strategies. So again, this is Monday, April 5, 7 p.m. at the Sunnyside School Auditorium. Anybody that has questions or wants more information on odor control at the wastewater treatment facility at the Tri-W property, please come to this session.
Board comment? Thank you, Mr. Buell. Before we move into the consent calendar, are there any directors that want to pull an item off the consent calendar? Okay, at this time, I'm going to open it up for public comment on the consent calendar. And appreciate it if you would identify the item you want to talk to, either the consent calendar or the administrative and committee reports.
Hello, my name is Al Barrow. Item C on the oral district legal council talks about you can't give low-income people a break because the higher-income people will have to pay for it. What a load of crap. I have to tell you that because Gilroy, which this plant was designed partially after, gives them a break, as does many other towns. Now, why you can't find out about that, I guess that's your opinion. But, you know, I know that other towns do it, and it is done. So I disagree with John Seitz's lifeline decision that you can't give a break to the lower income people on their sewer fees. I assume that's the O&M, not the payment. I don't know. But, you know, I would like to address also the EIR CEQA that John talks about, negative declarations. We look through all these, or I look through all these very carefully, and I understand them, but I don't think you really answered the task force what they said. You didn't answer anything, and you never have, and you never will, because you don't want to, because they know that you've got Swiss cheese in a lot of your ER planning. And, you know, I think it's time for somebody to get a little excited and wake up about this thing. You know what I mean? It's an outrage. The other thing I want to talk about is on the consent calendar, the nitrate water quality monitoring report of 2003, I think it reflects some things, but it overlooks private well owners who have a concern about the nitrates in their well and what's going to happen when the sewer nitrate starts coming into in heavy loads into certain other areas of town where you're disposing of those nitrates that are coming out of the sewer plant in large quantities. And I have a document by a local citizen who I'm going to submit to the grand jury with his concerns on those issues because you haven't addressed them. I know you're in a lawsuit now against the private well owners and the other water purveyors over who's going to pay for cleaning up the groundwater in the upper basin. So I think that's all I have to say right now.
Thank you. Mr. Buell, do you want to address the comment about nitrates coming out of the sewer plant in large quantities? Any idea what that's about?
Mr. President, our discharge from the wastewater treatment facility will be at less than 7 milligrams per liter.
That's compared to the septic discharge, which is at 50 to 70 milligrams per liter. The state drinking water standard is at 10. What all of the studies show is that over time, the discharge from the treatment facility will result in a gradual cleaning of the upper basin, and the nitrate contamination that we're suffering now will decrease as a function of the project, not increase.
Thank you, Mr. Beal.
Good evening, James T. Catch, Los Osos. One of the issues I was looking at is the most recent nitrate groundwater modeling study that was done, which shows that there's a large nitrate plume coming from the Cabrillo Estates in the area of the stables up there on the hill. And it seems to me that a large plume like this would be something that would need to be studied further with regard to how it's going to be addressed with regard to the collection systems. I'm not sure that having those areas above the plume still on septic tanks is going to stop this plume from moving down towards the bay. And that's just one of the issues I would like to see further study on. Thank you.
Mr. Buell, there was a part of the question was the Cabrillo Estates, as well as its stables, but in Cabrillo Estates, the board attempted to, we went to the Regional Water Board and attempted to get Cabrillo included into the prohibition area. Can you please tell the community what happened?
We petitioned the Regional Board in early 2000 to add the Cabrillo Estate subdivision into the prohibition zone. That was rejected, and the logic from the regional board was that the prohibition zone had been tested in court on numerous occasions, and that they did not want to reopen the whole issue of the legality of the orders 8313 and 8413, respectively, to subsequent litigation. So they were not willing to consider addition of Cabrillo Estates to the prohibition zone at that time. As you know, that issue can be revisited in the future, but Cabrillo Estates is not included in the wastewater treatment facility, and there is no capacity to provide for their future consideration.
And if, in fact, there's it's proven to be true that there that the effluent, in fact, flows north rather than west, that at that time that issue will need to be addressed.
Mr. President, I think it's fair to say that the regional board will look closely at that issue in the future. I don't know when or how, but that's not part of this project.
Thank you. Further public comment?
Jerry Walsh. Concerning your approval of prior minutes, I would ask that under item A, you delete the following. Carissa Swanson, Jerry Walsh, and Bruce Payne spoke in opposition to the ordinance, and add instead, Carissa Swanson, Jerry Walsh, and Bruce Payne gave constructive comments warning of the possible pitfalls of the ordinance and the need to correct them. As during our verbal comments in past meetings, the current written minutes reflect those who question you are cut short, those who support you are given more leeway and a longer explanation of their comments in the minutes. Thank you.
Next.
Julie Tacker. I'd like to address item C quickly. Mr. Seitz's report on the subsidizing of rates. Morro Bay City does this for their water, and I believe we've had that discussion here about the Los Osos Community Services District water, and that was the legal explanation, is that we couldn't, but sounds like we can. So if we can't subsidize them on their wastewater, let's help them on their water. And I'm a little bit concerned. I understand that our trash rates will be going up, and I wonder if we can do the same thing there. I wanted to ask Rob Miller on item H about Montgomery Watson Harza, and have they provided the water management tech memo, something that was in their defined in their scope of work. Where is it? I'd like to address item K, Mr. Wright's presentation on April 5th. I'd like to know how much the district is paying Mr. Wright to come to Los Osos, all expenses, and what that costs the community to have this special meeting. I'd like to address quickly the nitrate quality monitoring report. I think the community is interested in nitrates, and I would encourage the board to invite Spencer Harris back to show us this in a presentation. And if there is indeed a nitrate plume coming from Cabrillo Estates, doesn't the scientific data then override the decision to have a prohibition zone? And if that portion of the community would need to be collected and your plant does not have capacity for that, does that make sense to build a sewer plant in the middle of your town when it cannot be expanded to include the community that resides within your district? It really does not make sense to me. And I think if that portion of the community is one day included, and you have to enlarge a downtown sewer plant, which is a factory, in the middle of our town, it's a travesty, and you should be ashamed.
Mr. Seitz, regarding the tiered rates, is there a way the community could, would it require a Prop 218 vote?
Yeah.
To be able to get to that?
Can I just stress two issues here?
Yes, you may.
They've highlighted especially Mr. Barrow, highlighted the distinction between a city and a special district. A city has a general fund. They have discretionary funds. And my guess is if you went to Gilroy or any of those cities, you're going to find one or two issues regarding lifeline rates. One is the most likely scenario is that they're funded out of the general fund. Special districts do not have general funds, so that is not an option. The other option that they may have applied is tiering their water rates or their sewer rates. Now, the only way that I've tried to think about how could you tier sewer rates, but the idea on water rates is if you can tier water rates to meet the other constitutional prerequisite of water conservation, so if you can tier your water rates to meet that particular component of the Constitution. What most people think, or what most testimony of the public agencies hear, is that just by its nature, not by intent, but equates to a lifeline rate at the lower tier. In other words, if somebody conserves their water, they are not going to be paying the higher cost of the water. It's just ipso facto that it is going to equate to a lifeline rate. But now, it may, we're going to be going through our rate studies and our rate models. To me, it's hard to say because I haven't seen a sewer model based strictly on water consumption, because it would be a hard model to adjust. But maybe that's a model that comes out, but we'll have to wait and see. But the general rule is, and I reiterate this, and I'm not wavering on this, is that you can't tier sewer rates with sole objective of addressing the issue of lifeline rates.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz. There was a question.
Without having a general fund to subsidize the lifeline rate.
There was also a question on how much we're paying Grover Wright to come down and give the necessary information to the community on odor technology, because there have been numerous questions in the past addressing that, and there are continuing questions even after several presentations. So in order to get more information to the community to answer these questions, what is it costing the community to bring Grover Wright down?
Our understanding with Mr. Wright is that he will charge us on a time and materials basis $65 an hour. That is very competitive with other professionals of his qualifications.
And we're doing this in response to community questions relative to odor technology. Thank you, Mr. Buell. Any further public comment?
Hi, Lindy Owen, just a couple questions. When you say a time and materials basis and hourly, I want to know if he will be staying overnight. We will be putting him up in a hotel and paying for his meals also. I just wanted to know that. I personally think that Grover Wright has been on television for so many hours that I don't know why anybody wants to see more. You've presented his presentation. I believe that the community wants the sewer outside of town for many reasons. The odor is going to be a part of our life with a sewer plant located right here. It just is. There'll be times when the odor control doesn't function. So we don't want that risk. And speaking to item 8 on the consent calendar about the nitrate water quality monitoring report, I think the Cabrillo Estates plume is, again, we knew early on that Cabrillo Estates should have been hooked into us, should have been, morally, ethically, logically. And we've now designed a plant on such a small footprint that we can't do an expansion and we can't take care of those people. They've requested to be on it. As far as I understand, it was all based on a rather unpleasant political situation of somebody from regional board who lived up there or had a friend up there. And so that was excluded long ago. It needs to be brought back into the plan. I wish this had always been a water basin plan. We wouldn't be dealing with this. You're in the prohibition zone. You're outside of the prohibition zone. You pay top dollar. You don't pay a thing. We pay for a sewer to clean up water that you're going to use. Now we need to sue all those private wells and all the other water purveyors. This has just turned it into a big, ugly mess. And I think that's really sad. And lastly, on the emergency services issue, I know that there's just a report in there, but I urge people to pick up information. This election that's coming up is about moving from $45 a month, I believe, to $125 a month. So $7, we're talking about $7 jumping, well, $7 a month times 12 is $84 increase. Everything's going up. Our garbage is going up 10% next month or in a couple months. Our water rates have gone up, and they'll continue to go up. The lawsuit, anyway, we're living in a time of jumping debt, and the sewer is going to be the frosting on the cake. I mean, that will probably end many people's quality of life here. So I think that we need to look. I really do believe that Steve Sawyer has done his homework, and he has suggested that we should have seen 3 different contract bids from 3 different groups that could have provided equal service, and read his brochures. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. I think when you said $45 a month to $120 a month, I think you meant a year, and that was just on the special fire tax itself. Okay. There was another comment relative to Cabrillo, that something to the effect that they requested to be on it, meaning the project. My understanding was that there was a vote taken up there in the early 1980s, and they specifically requested not to be on it, a rather large margin. Now, there may be some individuals up there that would like to be. And, Mr. Buell, do you have any information?
Yes, the history is that in the one vote that they took, it was negative. They did not want to participate in the sewer.
Thank you. Any further public comment on?
Hello, my name is Lisa Schicker. I'm a member of the Los Osos Technical Task Force, and I'm here to address Mr. Seitz's comments in response to our letter. Although we do appreciate the general description of CEQA, and I'm sure the audience does as well, we're kind of way beyond that. And we do not consider your response a response to our letter or requests. It really doesn't cover it at all. In fact, you read from the same material that we provided you regarding CEQA and the need for a substantial or subsequent EIR. We provided over 40 points for discussion that still have not been answered. These are things that we found by looking in all the documents that were produced for this project, all the environmental documents. So we're still asking the board for a real response to our letters. That doesn't count. I'm sorry. That was a great overview of CEQA, but we've got a project that's federal funded. We've got NEPA concerns. We're not even talking about those. And we do have substantial changes, and everybody knows it. I mean, the final EIR talks about a covered and odor scrub plant. Covered. There wasn't one elevation drawing in the final EIR. When you look at a plan view, it looks like it's covered. It looks like it's buried. For those of us who are trusting this board and trusting that everything was going fine, my colleagues and I, for a few, we believed that the plant was covered and odor scrubbed until we saw coastal development permit issues that happened this last spring. That is your final EIR. That's what it says. The addendum doesn't even mention the elevations and the changes in the plant because they assume everybody knows it. But we're working professionals. We were trusting. And now we're reading, and we're finding many things. So I know Mr. Seitz also mentioned that the deadline has passed to challenge an addendum. The deadline has not passed to challenge this project. And you need to know that. The public needs to know that. An addendum that is not adequate can be challenged. The project can be challenged up into construction and after construction. We don't want that. We want you to stop and pay attention now. We have things that are very important. We don't have any financial gain here. We don't have anything to gain except passing on information to this community. That has to be an honest thing for you to hear. We don't have anything to gain financially. We're not making any money off this. We've donated hundreds of hours. We deserve some attention and respect for what we've presented to you. These are issues that the whole community cares about. So I just want to say it again. We're still asking for some kind of forum. 3 minutes at a pop is not going to do it. Please address our concerns. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Buell, the plant, the EIR itself, what does it show in terms of the plant drawings relative to the plants on there and the fact that the...
John, can I borrow the cover of the project report?
Project report, not the EIR. Not the project report, please.
The environmental impact report, may I borrow that, please, the draft? The draft environmental impact report references the project report. The draft of the project report. In the project report is a plan view of the treatment facility. It is clearly has building space that is not covered. In the project report is the profile showing the layout of the treatment facility, showing the portions that are covered and not covered. It is very clear that the project would have both elements. And if you compare the amount of exposed surface in the project report to where we are today, we're less than half. we have decreased the amount of building a roof that is exposed or not buried, if you will. So with all due respect to the speakers, their information is wrong.
Thank you, Mr. Buell. And I might point out that, and we urge members of the community to spend the time in becoming educated. And what I've done is I've asked the staff to bring part of our library in terms of the studies that have been gone through within the various committees through the, I guess, over the last at least over 5 to 10 years that we have behind us there. And that involves thousands and thousands of hours. Mr. Cicino.
Chuck Cicino, Los Osos resident. Once again, I'd like to know if you're going to respond to my previous question about Table 4.4 in the project report. That's what should have been reflected in the EIR. The table clearly identified the Andre site as having the lower overall life cycle cost. You cherry-picked the higher cost of pumping effluent out to the Andre site and back as the reason for rejecting that site financially. That's what led me to vote for your assessment bonds. I feel I was lied to.
Mr. Buell, would you like to address that?
Mr. President, your board was extremely careful in evaluating alternatives and developing your selected project. You base that on a series of trade-offs and your values. That is part of the decision process that is anticipated in state law, that you will make decisions as the elected representatives to your best judgment for the community. You adopted what is called a statement of overriding consideration. The approval resolution for the notice of determination is several hundred pages thick. It includes all of the findings and all of the trade-offs that you looked at in selecting the Tri-W site. It was not done lightly. It was done with full knowledge of all of the information.
And was done in public meetings. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Seeing no further public comment, Mr. Freiler, Director Freiler, do you have a comment?
Yes. Three speakers spoke on the nitrate monitoring quality report, and they referenced Cabrillo Estate being a source of nitrate in this report and in the basin, where, in fact, there is not one table, one illustration, one map, or one text that says anything about Cabrillo Estates in regards to this water quality nitrate monitoring report. None. The fact is that those who have studied this basin have sat with the hydrologists, that the direction of water flow...
What? Continue on, Director Freiler.
I forgot to turn... it's my fault. I forgot to turn off the timer from the last speaker.
I
think it's funny.
The hydrologists that have looked at this basin have concluded that water disposal from Cabrillo Estates flows west. It does not enter the groundwater basin. So, you know, this idea that you looked at this report and you came up with these ideas that Cabrillo was supplying nitrates to the basin is not true. And you should do more study to come back with a better idea.
Do we have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
Second.
Director LeGros.
Yes.
Director Bowker.
Yes.
Director Freiler.
Yes.
President Gustafson.
Yes. Now we'll move on to the regular agenda, item number 9. Review the state revolving fund loan eligibility determination. Mr. Buell.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, and the audience. I am pleased to report that Tuesday of this week we did get our eligibility determination from the State Water Resources Control Board. As I had been led to believe earlier, and as I wrote to you in your staff note, the State Board is willing to fund 100% of the works proposed in the 100% design. I believe this is very good news for your district. I think this will minimize the cost to the community in building this project. This is low-interest loan money that I think is extremely favorable in comparison to bond issuance money. There is one issue that I would like authority to negotiate with the board on. If you can look at Section 2 of the letter from the State Board, condition Section 2, Item 2.
Board comment? Director Bowker.
You know, we didn't anticipate such a high level of approval of all project components. And I think that's something else that makes me completely unwilling to turn down our position in line for this money and to cause the tremendous cost that it would cause to stop, go back, do over. The state personnel that are assigned to our project go through this with a fine-tooth comb, don't they? And they're extremely conservative. They're looking for projects that are going to be cost-effective in terms of using the state dollars. And I think that it speaks very well to the job done by Montgomery Watson that they were able to put something together that had nothing inked out. And I'm not willing to take a chance on a do-over. I think our do-over time is done. And I was very pleased to see that.
Director LeGros.
Yes, Mr. Buell, your use of the word pleased, I think, is an understatement. I think it's more like we should be dancing for joy. The fact that the state revolving fund is willing to carry 100% of almost every item we applied for is this shows to go to the degree of completeness of the all the people involved in putting this project together. In regards to the condition, item number 2, the paving, I personally feel that as a boilerplate island, it's just something the state has overlooked, and I think that they will readily change that condition to afford the soil conditions of Los Osos. So please proceed with that.
Any further board comment? Public comment?
My name is Al Barrow. I live in Los Osos. And I have a couple of statements to make. I would like the public and the people participating in these meetings to be aware that the State Water Board has been begging this community to have a centralized sewer for a long time. And they're adamant in their desire. I, in my wildest imagination, cannot imagine them not approving funding for whatever project our community wants. Our community doesn't want the project you presented. Montgomery Watson presented a similar project in Santa Cruz, and after it was completely designed the community turned it down. And I'd like to call your attention to Project Z, which is a $30 million project. Project Z was recommended by the money is, if it's for a sensible, affordable project, this one doesn't rate very well. This is 10 times the state average cost. 10 times the state average cost. That doesn't make financial sense to me.
Mr. Buell, comment that state revolving fund money will be there. Is there not a line of projects ready to go, waiting? And in fact, if we were to lose our place in line, then we'd have to go back to the end and start all over again?
Well, Mr. President, we'd have to compete. Right now, the state is not even accepting applications. So it's not clear when we'd be able to even get in that line and how we would stack up against those other projects that are there. And if I would like to remind the community as well, the speaker alleged that the state would fund anything we wanted to propose. One reason that you don't have a pond system is that they would not fund the pond system. So that statement is wrong.
And any further public comment on item 9?
Jerry Walsh. I'd like to know up to what dollar amount will the state fund go up to? Currently $92 million project. What if it goes up to $120, $150 million with the contingencies of the contractors, the add-ons, et cetera, et cetera? Is there a limit as to what the state fund will go up to? I don't think I'll dance for joy until I know. That's it.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Mr. Buell.
The state revolving fund, the staff, is authorized to approve a loan of up to $99.6 million, and that's for construction. That does not include the bond that you previously issued to pay for non-eligible costs.
Thank you. Any further public comment?
Julie Tacker again. I'm a bit confused at how you can have 100% approval if you don't know yourself how much the project's going to cost, because we've been told that the bids aren't going to be opened until April 28th. You can't tell the community how much the project's going to cost, so how could you tell them and get approval for the money? I'm going to need help with that. And then if it comes back somewhere over this amount of money that they're willing to loan us, and then they extend the loan, like Mr. Buell just said, that the staff has the authority to go 50% over, how does that affect our rates? What happens to our rates? It's still going to be within a 20-year period. I think those bills are going to get big, quite large. And then I know the concern about if we lose the loan or lose our place in line. What happens if that happens? You said something before about having to...
Thank you.
Mr. President, what I'd like to do is to start with the letter from the State Board. This letter reviews the 100% design submittal, and it determines that all of the works proposed in the 100% design submittal are eligible for the state revolving fund loan at 100%. In other words, what this says is when we open bids, those bids will be eligible for state revolving fund loan funding. Now, as we just discussed a minute ago, there is a maximum, a cap, dollars. We believe that we'll be very close to the original cost that we will not need the 50% overage that that is allowed to us, and that we can bring this project in very close to what our engineers have projected. We won't know that until we do open the bids, and we can report that to the community. I want to reiterate that we have set forth a schedule that will allow your board to convert the construction cost into the monthly rates and charges that the community has asked us to comment on. We will open bids April 28th, and we should be able to share with the community on May 12th very solid information as to what the rates and charges will be as a result of that effort. In regard to the value of the state revolving fund loan, the whatever it ends up being, whether it's the $66.4 million or some other number, that is a substantial savings to the community over what we'd need to do if we were to use municipal bonds. Understand that the state revolving fund loan is a low-interest loan. It's subsidized. The state is loaning us the money at half of the cost of the actual money if they were to issue a general obligation bond on the bond market. So they're underwriting the project. They're giving us a substantial subsidy. I've stated this before, over the life of the issue, if we were to fund an equivalent amount using municipal bonds, the community would pay $30 million more to use municipal bonds than the state revolving fund loan. If we do lose our place, it is clear that the community will still be compelled to build a wastewater project, and that means we'll need to go out to a subsequent vote for an assessment to pay for those more expensive municipal bonds. So the same process that we went through in 2000.
We're going to lose it, contrary to the mandate that we're supposed to build a sewer plant. And I doubt that the state who's asking us to clean up our water is going to just yank the loan from us. It just doesn't make sense to me. I just don't believe there's any credibility to that. That loan's been there for us. It will be there for us no matter how long it takes to build the sewer plant. They will be there for us because we have to clean up our water and build a sewer plant. I just don't believe that they would do that to us. It'd be hypocritical for the government to say, you got to do it, but we're not going to give you the money now. You have to stand in line. I understand there's $6 billion for 24 projects right now. I think we can do it, and I doubt they're going to do it to us.
Director Grow.
Lindy Ellen Lasosos.
Yes, I'd like to respond to that last comment. You know, the reason the State Board has been willing to work with this community to date is that we have been very serious over the last 5 years in pursuing a project. At this point, to abandon a project which is 100% design, gone through almost all the hurdles set for one more coming in April, to pursue yet another design would send a very clear message to the state of California that we as a community are not serious and do not have our act together. What agency in the state, yes, they want us to have clean water, but then again, we don't have our act together. If we did that, if we moved the sewer, we would not have our act together. We'd lose the money, and we would all pay a dear price for that. As a board member, and I'm sure the other board members will agree with me, I'm not going to play roulette with this community. We have a commitment for 100%. And to change it at this time, it's a terrible, terrible risk. And
thank you. Further public comment? Lindy?
Lindy Ellen Lasosos. I believe that the project does not meet what the request. The formation of a CSD was to bring us an affordable project. And I know that you have failed because I have read alternative systems throughout this country and the world that are put together for a lot less money. Why you chose to do a conventional sewer plant is based on something that you guys decided. It doesn't have anything to do with the input you had from the community.
Excuse me, Ms. Owen.
I'm going to the state revolving fund loan.
Please address that issue. Please.
Some of us are long-winded sometimes. I'm sorry. It is getting late. The state revolving fund loan has been held over from a conventional sewer to the battle to get onto an alternative sewer. We elected a CSD. The CSD took us back to the same battle that we had with the county. I believe we are going to have a sewer in this town of some kind. I believe the project is going to shoot out. I can't wait till May 12th to see what it breaks down to individual homeowners. And when you have a revolution and a town that says, why didn't we get a chance to vote about the location? The assessment vote was not about the location. Please, we've been told before.
So on, we're
through the affordability. I actually have nothing to add to it, as we know that affordability is generally equated, if not always equated, to property values and assessed valuations. And just by the evidence of the loan, of the bond rate that we got for our bonds when we issued them, speaks volumes as to what the assessed valuation of this community is.
Thank you. Director Bowker.
Unfortunately, there's some very short memories out in our community. We went to the State Water Resources Control Board in June of 1999 because the Los Osos Community Service District had decided in March to take on the wastewater project, and that was the first Water Resources Control Board meeting after that decision at which we could petition the board to allow us to take over the money that had been assigned to the county. The motion that was before that board was to deny us. There was a board member who happened to have been a visitor in our community who was also on President Warren Baker's advisory board at Cal Poly, who, after the motion was made and seconded, suggested that she would like to speak to the issue and said that while they had the responsibility to spend the state's monies wisely, we were a new community that was willing to take on this burden, and they wanted to provide us an opportunity to work with their staff to come up with a project that addressed our needs for wastewater treatment that was in keeping with their policy of funding projects to do such thing. And her speaking to this was the only thing that turned that board around. So they gave us a time period to come back to them with information about our project, where we were going, and to make sure that they weren't holding money for something that wasn't actually going to get used. Now, over the first year of that project, we had proposed to them a ponding system with step-stage collection. They would not fund that project because they don't fund projects that haven't been built before. They don't use that money for pilot studies. They didn't say we couldn't build it. They just said they wouldn't supply the low-interest loan money for it. People have said it's about water quality, it's about the basin, it's about sustainability. Well, you know, all of those arguments we made, and we gave legal counsel quite a run as you attempted to have us understand what we can and cannot do. When it's about wastewater, we don't get to come up with this altruistic, it's all about the drinking water basin. We wanted everybody in this community, whether they were collected or not, to share equally in the cost, and that would keep the cost down, and that included the 13% who were never going to get hooked up. And I remember Carlo Fowler having close to apoplectic fits over that one. The idea that we capitulated because of Montgomery Watson through. For us to go back up to Sacramento and say, Oh, we think we need to look at it again. Well, I'm sorry. I'm not willing to do such a foolish thing for this community.
Thank you. Further public comment?
Hi, my name is Lisa Schicker, Los Osos. I have to respond to Ms. Bowker's comments about a foolish thing. It's not a foolish thing. I have read letters myself from both the State Revolving Fund and from the Regional Water Quality Control Board that say it is not our decision about the project. It is the community's decision about the project. It is your decision. You do have alternatives. You do have cheaper alternatives. Let me finish, please.
Ms. Schicker,
this is about the State Revolving Fund.
Please, we don't have to get into alternatives and all that. Let's talk about the State Revolving Fund.
This is about people from the State Revolving Fund. Ms. Bowker was just talking about it. I really feel the need to respond because these letters state that we choose the method. Now, on to the State Revolving Fund a little bit further. Two comments from Mr. Buell I'd like to address. If about the $30 million more, we would lose our place. We need to build a wastewater project. A wastewater project. It doesn't say what kind. If the board, the likelihood of fines. If the board fails to move forward, Mr. Buell says, the likelihood is high. The board is moving forward. You are moving forward. Mr. LeGros concerns about abandoning now the State Revolving Fund. I would highly suggest that you have new information that we've helped you provide to you. You are still moving forward, but you can. Why don't you try a creative approach to go to the State Revolving Fund and say, we got to adjust our project? They want us to have clean water. Please quit sighing. Please. I'm trying to be polite. We're not trying to put you in a hole here. We're trying to help you. And I know you might get angry about that, but that's the truth. Now I have two specific questions about the State Revolving Fund loan. You said that you submitted 100% plans and specifications. It's my understanding that the board has to adopt 100% plans before you can send them to the state board. Did you formally adopt 100% plans? I've been at all these meetings. I haven't heard you do it. But did you adopt somewhere where I wasn't at a meeting? And did you formally do it? And if so, what date did you do that at? And then a very important thing I noticed on your 100% approvals, an ineligible cost for this state revolving fund is change orders and contingencies. We are trying to tell you that there are going to be extreme amounts of change orders on this project. You went out to bid before you finished your information that you needed. You don't have your permits. You don't have your coastal development permit. You don't have your Section 7. You don't have your Section 106, et cetera, et cetera. We've written all of this. Change orders are not eligible. Worry about those costs. I'm just passing it along. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Buell?
I agree with the speaker. The state board approved your facilities plan. They did so. They approved the specific project, the Tri-W site, the disposal, the collection, and they authorized you to prepare your final design. You did so. They have now issued the eligibility determination based on that final design. That is not valid for another final design. Your facilities approval back in 2001 references this project. If you were to start over and go somewhere else, or maybe six other ways, because I'm convinced that if you were to look at one site, you'd end up looking at 40 sites. That facilities approval issued to you in 2001 would not be valid, and you would literally have to start over to move even in the competition to hope to get additional state revolving funds that you would lose.
Thank you, Mr. Buell. Director Fryler, do you have a comment?
Yes, Lisa, I'd like to ask a question of you. Thank you. You said that you had language which said that this district could choose whatever project they want, that the state revolving fund or the regional board does not tell us what process to you or what project to build. What is the date and who wrote that letter?
I don't have the copy here with me, and I would assume that you have the same copy that I read. I did read it both from the Regional Water Quality Control Board and the State Revolving Fund that said that the project design is dictated by the community, not them. They do not have the ability nor willingness to choose the design.
And in 1998, when we became a district, that was true. But as you proceed along in the design of a project, you have constraints. When you find out that the State Revolving Fund will not fund a ponding system because the regional board doesn't believe in the nitrate reduction of that type of process, that says, well, you can't build any plant you want. You have to build a plant that the regulatory agencies will stand behind. So while it's true what you say, that time has passed and it's not applicable to this project at this time.
But there are other alternatives to the one we have that they would approve. I think so, because we read about them. We see them in the lists. I have the whole list, if you'd like to see it, of all the projects that are approved. There are other types of projects other than what we're doing that have less impacts on the environment.
Well, I think this is beyond the State Revolving Fund discussion. Thank you. Any further public comment? I'll bring it back to the board at this point. Further board comment?
At this time, I'd like to make the motion to authorize acceptance of the State Revolving Fund determination.
And direct staff to transmit.
With the negotiation of item two?
Yes, yes.
The creation of a wastewater system superintendent position starting in July of this year so that the individual that we retain could observe construction of the wastewater treatment facility. This evening, staff is bringing a job description to your board and a salary range included in the resolution that would authorize the hiring of an individual that is qualified according to the job description. We've done the salary survey. We have proposed that the position start at a total compensation at step one of $78,000. This is a very competitive market to get the right individual. You will need to be competitive in your wage offering. However, since this individual would perform the work as an inspector, you would have an offset by not paying your construction management firm a comparable amount. On an interim basis, the office for this individual would be the construction trailers at the Tri-W site, and he would work closely, he or she would work closely with your construction management firm to assist in overview of the construction of the treatment facility. Your board had some previous discussion as to whether you wanted to call this position wastewater system superintendent. We are flexible in that regard. If the board wants to rename the position, we would request that you do so this evening so that we can proceed with the advertisement and the job announcement. This, what we are recommending is that you adopt the resolution that's attached, which would create the position, set the salary range, and authorize your general manager to hire an individual after July 1st of this year. This item was reviewed by the Finance Committee yesterday. They unanimously supported adoption of the resolution. They did want to point out that there was an apparent discrepancy between the salary range on the organization chart that says during construction and the organization chart that said operations. That was intentional on staff's part. The salary range in during construction is the 04-05 period. The salary range presented during operations was appreciated so that we didn't underestimate the future salary cost to the district, assuming a 2.5% inflation in salary over the three-year period between 04-05 and 05. Nothing sacred about it. I think people understand that it is the manager of a system. But again, I have no objection to using any other term that the board is more comfortable with.
Director Lorgro.
Yes, the public may have some questions regarding why are we hiring at this point prior to having a operational wastewater project. There's been a lot of discussion in the various committees about that, but could you give the highlights as to the rationale of the CSD?
Okay. The bottom line is that if you do bring this person on at the beginning of construction, he or she will be able to observe the construction and will understand everything that went into the wastewater treatment facility. That individual will actually observe all of the nuts and bolts, how it all got put together, and also be in a position to hire the crew that will be needed to operate the facility. This does give you an opportunity to know this individual and for that individual to be intimately familiar with your project.
Is it not also true, though, that the services that the superintendent will be providing during construction would have also had to have been provided by Montgomery Watson Harza, and that there is actually a savings there?
Well, there's an offset.
Offset.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement.
Any other board comment? Director Fryler?
Yeah, I would support this recommendation. As far as naming of those individuals within the wastewater department, I'd like to bring that to committee, if that's possible. Is it absolute that you need a... I'd like to give the committee something to do.
Okay, I know the wastewater committee's not going to meet in the near future.
Oh.
And I very much would like to get the advertisement going. You're going to have a tough time bringing on a competent person by July 1.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, you know, whatever you want to call this individual, you can rename the position at a later date.
Okay. Well, during a motion, I'll make
another
call.
Board comment? Public comment?
Julie Tacker. I support the idea that the person that's hired be there for construction. I know that Scott, forgive me, I don't remember his last name, at Pacifica was integral and watched how that plant was built, and that helps in its operation today. I do believe that it is premature to advertise for this individual. The district incurs expenses in the advertising process, interview process, until you have a coastal development permit in your hand.
Mr. Buell?
Mr. Chairman, I do not have a short list.
Further public comment?
Lindy Owen, Los Osos. Will we be looking at those, able to look at those, and have you considered Grover Wright for the position?
No.
Any further public comment? Bringing it back to the board.
Well, personally, I don't think what I call it is as important as getting the position description adopted in part of the district's organizational chart and to get the advertisements prepared and submitted, because it takes a while to get them into the professional journals. So while my little brain can handle the word manager better than superintendent, I don't think the term is as critical as moving forward.
Is that a motion?
Director Freiler.
No. Yeah, and I would like it to be the manager. So I'll make a motion that the stack recommendations with the position title changed to wastewater system manager.
I'll second it.
Can we have a motion and a second on the floor? Any further discussion? I have one point that I'd like to point out, that it gives us another expert on the ground to follow the project, and somebody that's going to be intimately related to this and seeing how the project's going, where all the pipes go and various the forms of the equipment, et cetera. And it helps augment our district engineer, which, again, is good for the community, because both the district engineer and superintendent will report directly to us, and that will be of help to us. So any further discussion? And I'll call for the question. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say no. And we'll take a 5-minute break at this point. Come back to order. We're going to start on item 11. We schedule the second April meeting. Mr. Buell.
Mr. President, members of the board and the audience, it's our understanding that the appeal of the coastal development permit will be heard at the Coastal Commission's April 14 through 16 meeting in Santa Barbara. That is a very important time for your board to participate. That is permitted by the Brown Act, and with the exception that President or Board Member Bowker wouldn't join you.
Any board comment?
I have no problem with the 12.
Yeah.
Public comment? Ask for comments.
No, I meant this is also for
the Yeah, I think that was yes. Okay. We have any public comment? Okay, bring it back to the board. Yeah, I don't have any trouble with the 12th either. So.
I won't be there.
I understand. Okay.
Nope. Stretch.
No, you've got the direction to.
Yes.
Reset.
Thank you, Ms.
Okay. April 12th. Okay, item number 12, authorized execution of agreement with Crawford, Moultrie and Clark. Mr. Buell.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board and the audience. Your coastal development permit and your final environmental impact report do obligate the district to perform environmental monitoring during construction. You're already into a pre-construction agreement with Crawford, Moultrie, Clark. I have negotiated a proposal for Crawford, Moultrie, Clark to do this work on a time and materials basis with a not-to-exceed expenditure limit of $1,206,723. The cost of this work is eligible for funding through the state revolving fund loan. In the past week, this item has been reviewed by both your Environmental Review Committee and your Finance Committee. In both cases, each committee unanimously recommended that your board negotiate and execute an agreement with Crawford Moultrie Clark. It is staff's belief that they are uniquely qualified to do this work. I do want to remind the board that you used a competitive process to select them initially, and they have been involved in all of your environmental review since 1999. So with that said, I'd like to offer either Mr. Clark or Mr. Moran, if there's any questions on the proposal itself, the board may wish to ask them specifics. Otherwise, staff recommends that the board adopt the attached resolution directing the execution of a standard agreement with Crawford Moultrie Clark to do the work set forth in the proposal on a time and materials basis with a not-to-exceed limit of $1,206,723.
Any board comment? Director Bowker.
Mr. Buell, didn't Crawford, Clark, and Moultrie work very hard with Liz Caldwell to come up with that book that details every single condition that we have to meet and when the timetable has to be met by? And I remember when we went through intimate knowledge of all of those components, all of the conditions, everything that's going on, not to mention the lay of the land and the project itself. So we scrutinized the qualifications of the firms who were interested in providing environmental services to Los Osos. Since that point in time, just as I would not support going out and changing our district engineer because we're very happy with the work that's being done for us, I think we would be very foolish to think that we could save money and come in with a quality consultant any cheaper than what they've offered to do for us and still get the same quality of work.
Thank you. Director LeGros.
Yes, in regards to the sole sourcing, you know, I always like to see going out to general bid, but in this case, I have to agree with Mrs. Bowker wholeheartedly in terms of the overall costs. But if we did go out to a general bid on this service and put out the RFPs and the advertisements and the interviews and so forth, would we run into any time constraints in regards to the project that is we are going to be beginning very soon?
Yes, you need to submit this to the State Water Resources Control Board this month for you to stay on the timeline for the approval to award to be issued in June.
Thank you.
Any further board comment? Public comment?
I just wanted to add that that has not been even a factor in my decision. If I was not confident that this firm could do the work that would be done, then I would want to go elsewhere. But I've been very satisfied with the work that they have done, and I think that they can do the work that needs to be done.
Thank you. Public comment?
Good evening, Mr. President, directors of the board. Melissa Mooney. I live on Highland Drive in Los Osos. I really wrestled with whether I wanted to come down here tonight. I attended the Environmental Review Committee meeting last week, and I asked questions about the bidding process. I do have some concerns. I might add that, as you know, I was on the Environmental Review Committee for 3 years, and I've worked both for San Luis County and for Santa Barbara County. I've implemented environmental quality assurance plans in Santa Barbara County and San Luis Obispo County. I pay taxes in the community of Los Osos, and I find it I'm just surprised that this district will enter into a multi-year contract for $1 million for work. I mean this is I'm just surprised and somewhat appalled, actually. And you know, I'm taking some risk coming here and saying this, and I want to say to you that it doesn't make me feel good, because I work professionally with these people. I respect these people. And I don't want to denigrate their qualifications to do this work. And I've written a letter with my concerns. I'm a taxpayer in this community, and I don't think that this is fiscally responsible.
Jerry Walsh. Wow, that's two over $1 million contracts, one for CMCA, one for Far Western Archaeological Services, without going out to bid. I guess like the Singleton and Associates proposal, once in the loop, you're in, no matter what the cost. Mr. Buell even stated at the Finance Committee yesterday that he was unable to negotiate a lower price with CMCA after reviewing their proposal. Amazing. Since an email to Mr. Buell from Dave Moran on February 11th indicates that CMCA understood they needed to be flexible and that they were charging a lot of money. Good negotiation, Mr. Buell. I can't wait to see what happens when you run into a tough negotiator on the other side of the table.
I think we need to, set the record straight. please.
I'm sorry. The speaker is wrong. When we started this discussion, Crawford, Moultrie, Clark initially suggested that this work would cost $1.4 million, and we negotiated that down. I said that very clearly in the Finance Committee meeting yesterday. We developed a reduced cost through negotiation.
I heard it stated very clearly in the committee.
And we have another, a tape that proves otherwise.
Excuse me?
She's referring
please.
To that other contract.
Yes, you already left, you came back, and then you interrupted me when I'm making a comment.
We will send you a copy of the tape if you like.
Ms. Walsh, she also commented that once in the loop, implying that once a contractor was had contracted with the district. I think I remember the Oswald mm-hmm. engineering that they didn't do the job for us, and we retrieved $375,000 of that money. So I don't think that that's quite an accurate statement either. Any further public comment?
Julie Tacker. I have no disrespect for Mr. Clark, who's in the room, and Crawford, Moultrie, Clark, his firm. I have no doubt they have worked hard for this district and this project. They actually have some ongoing contracts and that work that is incomplete. If you put this out to bid, their experience and expertise will be reflected in the bid, and the community will be at ease with selecting this firm. Mr. LeGros mentioned the timeline. I've been watching this project very, very carefully.
We are in the process of working through all of the steps to get the approval to award. Our current commitment from the State Board requires us to issue notice to proceed by June 28th. To get there, we need to submit all of the pieces. We are eligible for the cultural monitoring, the environmental monitoring, and the construction. Those are the pieces that we need to put into place so that the state board can issue our approval to award.
Further public comment?
My name is Al Barrow. I live here in Los Osos. I, too, am shocked. I'm not shocked by you, Cliff. I'm shocked that you would propose these contracts at such large amounts of dollars. Your fiduciary responsibility to the community's assets, I believe, are sorely unaddressed here. In 2001, 2002, the grand jury commented on Cambria's sole source contract for $15,000. And their advice to the Board of Supervisors was that they recommended that they would not do this type of sole source bidding. That was only 15. This is far more than that, way far more than that. This is a huge amount of money by comparison. You know, Mrs. Bowker's comment that, they'd have to get up to speed. Well, your logic in contract law would be so weak, because if that were the case, every project would have one contractor on it, and that doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, these conditions here have been bid on by, I think, at least 13 different major contractors, and they all bid on it. You know, I just don't agree with that. I think that sole source bidding is very unfair. Dealing behind the table, under the table, making a deal, as Mr. Buell just said, he made a deal with them. He saved $200,000. How do we know that it wasn't a highball to start with? You know, and then Chris comes back from Spain and outbids a competitor, ESA, for the scoping, $65,000. He drops $60,000 off of it. How could he afford to do that? I don't know. But then here we have a contract coming right behind it for $1.2 million. And I have to say that your practices are very questionable. They're not in line with the grand jury's recommendations. And I think you're very, very out on a limb that you're sawing off right now. And I think you should reconsider this. I think you should set it for a different meeting and give it some more thought, give it some time. I just think that...
We don't know that we can get a cheaper price. Now, I know Rose thinks she's an expert in this, and she's not. But I think if you put it out to open bid, you'll find there'll be other people with other ideas, with other processes, with other information that can bring forth new ideas. I think this company, Moultrie and Clark, already has a vested interest in this process. They've been here a long time. They're sedimentary in their ideas. I think we need to change some stuff. And I think Mrs. Bowker's attempt to try to persuade the community to accept these things is wrong. I think we need to get more bang for our buck, and I don't think this is the way to do it. I'm sorry that Richard LeGros thinks that we're not going to meet the timeline. You guys set up the timeline, not the community. It's in your inability to meet this timeline. That's not my fault. That's your fault. That's Bruce's fault. But it's not my fault. Don't penalize me and the rest of the community for it. I think Moultrie and Clark has a purpose for doing this. Okay, I don't think you just came upon this decision lightly. I think they realize that there's money to be made here, not just in the non-bid process, but the fact that there will be change orders down the road that nobody else will be able to be involved with. I'm asking you to reevaluate your decision here tonight, take away this contract for them, and put it out to open bid. Allow us at least to see if they can do such a great job and they're so familiar with the project, they will be low bidder. There's no doubt about it. But let you and I and everyone else in this community decide what's best for us, not just accept what they say as gospel, because it's not. They've made mistakes on the EIR. They've made mistakes on the other paperwork. It's going to come out. Why do we want to keep paying them to make these mistakes? And the last thing, why do we want to pay them on T&M? That's the poorest way to pay any contractor. He makes a mistake, you pay him a prop a profit. He makes another mistake, you still pay him a profit. Make him bid hard money contract, not this T&M. It's the wrong thing to do, and Stan, you know it.
Mr. Buell, who set the timeline?
Well, both the regional board and the state board have respective timelines, Mr. President.
And, in fact, we were scheduled to have broken ground on this project in July 2003, if I remember correctly, at one time. Mm-hmm. And what caused that delay?
Litigation.
Thank you. Any further public comment?
Lindio and Los Osos, I'd like to read from the letter from Dave Moran to Bruce Buell, because he disagreed with what Jerry Walsh said. Bruce, thanks. First of all, thanks again for asking us to continue our relationship with the district. Then we move down to where it says, you'll notice we've included a contingency of 20%. If this is a problem, not loan eligible, etc., let us know and we'll revise accordingly. Also, we've included costs for miscellaneous office equipment and other materials we'll need. This, too, is not a deal breaker. And last but not least, please let us know if we've run afield of your expectations. We recognize this is a lot of money and that we need to be flexible. Please give us a call when you've had a chance to look this over. Now, if I were going out to purchase, let the market will bear, and then you make the decisions based on the acceptance of the work they've done in the past and the probability that there may be other people that could pick up the work that we have already paid for and continue on with it. I think environmental monitoring is something that is done by a number of these groups, and it needs to go out to bid. This is ridiculous. $1.2 million is a lot of money to just say we can be flexible. So if it goes out to bid, and on the timeline issue, we've known that this was going to be coming up. We've had a year to check into other environmental groups, and I think that's a real failure on your part to bring us the best deal for our money that we can't afford. Thanks.
Any additional public comment?
Mr. President, members of the board, my name is Vivian McNeil, and I live in Los Osos. Did I turn that off? I'm still on? Okay. I would urge you to authorize this agreement with Crawford Moultrie Clark and Associates. I know that my standing up here and doing this is not a real popular thing to do. However, I believe that you have looked at your options, and this firm knows the area, knows the project, and I think that we would be well served by them continuing. Thank you.
Thank you. Further public comment?
Hi, my name is Lisa Schicker, Los Osos. I'd like to state for the record that I also work as an environmental consultant, and I work as an environmental biologist funding federal and state projects. And I'm quite used to the procedures that are required when using federal funds of any kind, state funds. I'm not sure if EPA funds are different than the federal funds that I use, but I don't think they are. I think there are some legal requirements when you are managing these funds. And Mr. Gustafson mentioned that he's a contract lawyer, and I really want to know if first of all, no offense to the firms, none at all. They're professionally just great. It's not about them. It's about your procedures and building trust with your community. Is it legal to spend this quantity and this amount of federal funds without going through a competitive bid process? I know that you said that you selected the firm in 1999. That's almost 5 years ago. And I know that in my own work, if this work, you know, I mean, I'm not sure that this work could have been anticipated at that time. Did you have a scope of work that detailed out the phases that are now being discussed? Furthermore, it sounds like from the, I was going to ask this question, but it sounds like the firms wrote the proposal. Typically, you would write the proposal and then you would negotiate. You wouldn't ask the firm, it's like handing over the checkbook. I mean, you hand over, you say, firm, please write me a proposal and tell me how much you want to charge. And Bruce said he negotiated the right way. And I am asking the question, is this legal to do this, what you're doing? Is it legal? Thank you.
Yeah, I heard the question three times in terms of legality. Mr. Seitz, would you please talk about the legality of it? And I don't think I mentioned I was a contract lawyer. I've done contracts and other things, but not per se, but please.
I know of no federal legal impediment, but that doesn't mean that there is one. So if there is a real concern that there may be one, I would suggest that the board would approve the contract subject to a determination that there are no legal or federal impediments to letting the contracts on this basis.
Further public comment?
Question. Rachel Rosenthal, Los Osos. I have some questions, too. I'm sorry it's so late, but I didn't hear what happened to the smaller is this tied to the scoping contract now? No. Okay. All right. I just wanted to ask about the monitoring. If this sounds kind of picky after all those big comments, but does the consultant take over any of the liability for noncompliance? For example, for the NPDES, if there's a failure on the part of the contractor to comply and they're cited and they continue to not comply, and then this is an example, the water board finds the CSD, does the consultant take over the liability for the failure in the course of construction to protect the CSD?
Thank you, Rachel. Mr. Seitz.
Just respond quickly. Is it on? Yeah. Our standard agreement requires a strict indemnity clause and professional liability insurance. So it's, maybe I don't know if I'm catching your question, but...
sometimes if the general contractor fails to comply, then the enforcing agency will find the owner, in this case the CSD. Sometimes it's a city. President Gustafson, this is a... and so then sometimes in those failures to comply, the city is found liable and has to pay fines. And a common one in these days is the new Stormwater 2 that came in March, 203. For example, a construction site will not be properly stabilized. And after noncompliance, the city will be cited and brought before a board and found not guilty, but in violation, and then be fined. And the cases I've seen didn't have a consultant monitoring. So I wondered, in this situation, does the consultant take the responsibility so that it would be the consultant that would have to pay the fine?
Bonds and all types of bonds. We hold retentions and we don't actually pay the total contract price until after we have a notice of acceptance. In other words, our construction manager and design engineer advises that they have completed the project in conformance with all the laws, regulations, and forms. So there's that. That's number one. Number two is to the extent that the let's just say from a consultant's perspective, to the extent that the alleged violation or the violation was a result or in any way connected with their contractual obligation to the district, liability would run. I mean, I don't know how else to answer it. Can I say that that some federal agency could, my wildest imagination, come up with a fine that we could not pass on to the contractor, the engineer, or the biologist, or who? My guess is the answer is yes, but I don't know what it would be. We can write indemnity clauses and professional liability insurance clauses, but I don't know that we can ever write one that's going to cover every potential possibility. We try, though.
Any further public comment?
Chuck Cecina, Los Osos. I'd like to know what the process is here. If you go with this sole source approval, do you have to provide some kind of reasoning justification in writing for doing that, or is it just we want to do it?
Let me just speak broadly.
Chuck, is that your comment?
Yes, that's okay. A question. And they haven't been answered. My previous question never got answered, and I've asked it twice, so I would like an answer.
Well,
yeah. Okay.
Don't know?
No. If you're done, that's fine.
That's it. That's the question.
You're done. Okay. Well, Mr. Seitz.
First of all, typically a public agency hires professional consultants not based on the lowest price. That's a general rule that's pretty much tried and true. You hire consultants based on their reputation and their expertise to do a project. I think that sometimes price is a component of it, but it is not the component. It's not like bidding a construction project where you give it to the lowest responsive bidder. When you hire consultants, that is not the test. However, I would just remind that my recommendation to the board is if they're going to award the contract tonight is to award it based on an opinion that you haven't breached any federal funding statutes or stuff that Lisa has brought up.
Okay. Back to the board.
Yeah, I see no further public comment. I'll bring it back to the board. Director Bowker.
Okay. When we took on the wastewater project and we started looking at what we needed in terms of services to the board for the life of the project, we went out to bid looking for environmental consultants that would serve us throughout the project. And both of them are involved in this phase two monitoring. Secondly, the board was given exhaustive detail in terms of tasks, hours, man hours, over the 2.5 years that this monitoring is going to take place. Someone said, well, what was the Liz Caldwell book? And someone else said, why didn't we start working on this sooner? Mr. Buell, we couldn't start working on the monitoring until we knew what the conditions were as a result of our coastal development permit. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And this, all of these tasks are defined in terms of what oversight we need to have for what conditions during a specific time, and what is it that needs to be done. So before we could even look at what it was going to cost us, we had to decide what had to be done, and that's what you've had Liz Caldwell working on.
That is correct.
And she has identified a chronology, type of tasks, each of the mitigations that have been identified, who has to do what to whom. And that was what was given to Crawford, Moultrie, Clark, and said, okay, what do you need in terms of man hour and your consultants and how many biologists and how many people are this and what kind of mapping and on and on and on and on. And that's what resulted in this, which is the synopsis, which is this is the short form. We are not cavalierly soul-sourcing. We are continuing on the work that we had defined at the start of this project. And in terms of giving more value to this community by going out to bid, those people who think we are going to do anything, that we're going to save any money, if, again, you look at the level of detail here, and we were suggested to do it on total cost and not time and materials, well, if we don't have to spend the time doing this, then we won't pay for it. And will the contract be let with a not to exceed? That's a question.
There will be a not to exceed, and I've stated it several times.
So it really benefits the district to do on time and materials not to exceed than it does to have a total just absolute flat value for it.
And that has been the standard policy of this district from the day you hired me.
So in terms of our fiduciary responsibility to the community, we didn't get to this point on tonight's agenda by a cavalier, oh yeah, let's go hire a consultant.
Any additional board comment? Is there a motion?
To adopt the resolution to hire Crawford Metoring Park for the environmental monitoring, coupled with Mr. Sykes's recommendation that it be contingent upon researching the if there are any reasons why we cannot enter it on sole source.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
We need to do a roll call. I'm sorry.
Please.
Director Freiler.
Yes.
Director Bowker.
Yes.
Director LeGros.
Yes.
President Gustafson.
Yes. Okay, item 13, authorized execution of agreement with Far Western Archaeological Services.
They have a long and distinguished association in evaluating these issues. They were part of the team with Crawford Moultrie Clark when we went through that review. Bill Hildebrand is here, and I believe Debbie Jones is here as well from Far Western. If the board has any questions, staff is recommending that you authorize the execution of a standard agreement with Far Western on a time and materials basis to accomplish the scope of work that has been described with a not-to-exceed limit of $1,070,632.
Any board comment? Director Freiler.
Is this not-to-exceed based on a certain level of fines? I mean, of archaeological activity, or is there like a baseline kind of hours that is considered, or does it depend on what happens when we trench and we find, you know, fines?
I'm Bill Hildebrand from Far Western, and what it's based on. Well, first of all, we have a treatment plan that's been certified by numerous agencies. Since it's 106, you have the President's Advisory Council, the State Office of Historic Preservation, and other regulatory agencies. And so there's a basic strategy and scope of work that we're required to do. The not to exceed is based on a worst case scenario on what we expect to find, based on what we know now. And what we know now is based on a pedestrian survey of the area, a record search first. There's five phases. We've done the first three, and we're ready to go to do the fourth. First phase is a record search, so we know what everybody else is, whatever's been known about the area first. Then we've gone out and done a pedestrian survey of the whole project area, and since the visibility of the ground is not good because of the urban setting, we've taken a bunch of core samples too. Based on that, we found some high sensitivity areas that we're going to do pre-construction trenching and excavations in to get a better handle on where the monitoring needs to be focused on. And that fourth step, the pre-construction trenching and excavation, we're ready to start soon. This last phase is the monitoring and preemptive data recovery as we go. We think that from what we've seen, that estimate may be a little high, because when we first came into the project, people were saying the whole town is an archaeological site. We're learning that that's not the case, that we're able to find, we're able to isolate more discrete areas, and so But to answer your question, it's worst-case scenario based on what we expect to find, and it's based on a unit cost per cubic meter of excavation.
Ah, okay. Okay, thank you. You answered my question.
Then we're still within that original budget.
Right. The first cost estimate that we came up with, we're within it, and we'll stay that way. I'm not... That's why, you know, we're willing to sign not to exceed contract.
Any additional board comment? Public comment?
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
My name is Al Barrow. And again, I want to reiterate, I don't think anybody here is questioning the qualifications of the consultants. But that's what I'm hearing about, is how well qualified they are. It's not about their qualifications. It's about that there are other qualified people. If you try to convince me that this company and that company are the only two qualified environmental and archaeological companies, you should pack your bags and go home. This is California. There are hundreds of companies that are qualified to do that. There's hundreds of individuals. People that are in the field have testified that there are other people that are qualified. This is about your bidding process. Competitive bidding. I don't care. I'll stand up here for 3 minutes and say it over and over again. Competitive bidding. You're a Republican. You believe in democracy and free enterprise. This is not free enterprise. Free enterprise is giving everybody an opportunity to bid on a project and proving their qualifications. And you're not allowing that. So as head of the Bush reelection campaign, you should be ashamed of yourself. I mean, you know, bids should be competitive, especially large bids, you know. And if it were the case that you could only have one consultant through the life of the project since 1999, then why didn't you tell us back then that we were buying the whole show? So I think competitive bidding is the issue here. It's not the qualification of the contracts. The individuals that are bidding may be fine quality, good people, good mothers and fathers. They may pray to the right gods, have the right religion. But everybody has a right, when there's public money, to bid on it. And I think Mr. Buell is polluting the process. Thank you.
Any additional public comment?
Rachel Rosenthal, Los Osos. I just had some questions about the public in this a summary of the proposal. It says about public meetings and public documents, and then it also says afterwards that there may be a display set up in the Morro Bay Natural History Museum, and then there's some, I didn't get a chance to go through the amount of money that's apportioned to that part, but I would like to ask that when you know that's been produced for the project, put onto a website. Again, I ask this, I've given up. But there won't be that many documents that can go to the public on these particular contracts, but I would like to see a more professional website. And if it takes having the consultants find someone in-house who can write script and do correct photography at a high level so that it can be shared with the community. All the projects now, Nascimento, they have high-level websites now with all the documents ready for download in full form. I had to pay $120 to get the EIRs and the project manual. And all the other big projects of this size have it ready in PDF, just downloadable from the site. So, again, I ask that. And for the archaeology part, at least, so that the community can read online and see pictures.
Thank you. Additional public comment?
Julie Tacker. I've said this before, I find the archaeology of Los Osos my favorite part of any of these discussions. I would have liked to have seen competitive bidding. I think you've heard a lot of that tonight about how you're doing your business. What I am specifically concerned about with the contract and the work that's going to go on in this is how it helps the individual property owners. Their property is sensitive too. And Far Western, I don't know if they are available for the private property owner to hire, or will you have a list of archaeology contractors that are available to those residents who are in those sensitive areas? It's nobody's fault that their house is in a sensitive area. The way development came had no regard for that. So those, there are going to be some fines on private properties, and I'm very concerned about the extreme cost of the digging that has to go on there, and I know you are paying for it with the sewer project, and so consequently that's spread throughout the cost of the project. But my understanding for some of these very delicate digs, it's between $3,000 and $6,000 per cubic meter. That's very expensive. And if that transfers on to the property owner, I just don't see how many people will afford their laterals. I hope you can help us with some archaeologists and some direction there. Thank you.
Mr. Buell, do you have any comment relative to the private property addition?
Yes, Mr. President. Private property owners will need to comply with the state and federal laws in regard to work both for the district and individual property owners. But other firms are available that can help.
And in terms of the depth before the, again, just in a general sense, in terms of depth before you hit fines, as it relates to the laterals themselves, is it more likely that private property you're going to find those kinds of fines as opposed to the when we're putting the mains itself in the streets?
Well, as I understand it from Bill, we're looking at a 39-inch horizon for most materials.
The depth of the archaeology here is not that great because it's an old stabilized dune geologic setting. But one thing I wanted to say, we haven't worked this out yet, and it's kind of unclear what the relationship is between what we're doing and the laterals. But if there's a situation where we've done data recovery in a sensitive area and have achieved a good sample of what's in that location, and someone has a lateral that's coming off of that, then the value of that resource has been realized. There's been a mitigative step that's been taken, and therefore the information that we need from that place is already, we've already gotten it. So the only, you might lower the amount of work that a private citizen needs to do to simply monitoring for human remains, because you can't sample human remains, but you can sample other parts of the archaeological record. So even though we won't be involved with working directly with the private land owner, we can help develop a system that they can use, you know, with the county or however that works out, that what we do will pay off for the landowner down the line.
Thank you, Mr. Hildebrand. Any additional public comment?
I do need a little, Lisa Schicker, again, I have a very confusing point here to bring up. Lateral lines, archaeology and biology. This firm is not covering the archaeology and the laterals. That CMC is not covering the laterals for biology. But there's two federal processes. There's Section 106 for archaeology and Section 7 for endangered species. I've been told that laterals are included in the Section 7, and now I'm hearing that Section 106, they're not included. I need some clarification on that. I also noticed that the archaeological consulting, although it's eligible for state revolving funding, it wasn't on that handout that you gave us. It wasn't on that list. I have some questions I could not find in the proposal for the archaeology. The item number 4, pre-construction trenching and excavations, and I do believe those excavations would be subject to the Section 7 consultation. Haven't heard anything about that yet. I don't see it in the proposal, so maybe we could take a closer look at that. Thank you.
Mr. Buell.
Section 7 eligible that the biological opinion that we will be issued will include the permission for the private property owner to install their lateral. That was a extended discussion, more complicated by input from the community, but possibility of requiring 5,000 separate Section 7 permits just wasn't a practicality. In regard to getting Section 7 clearing for the research work, the sampling, the service has determined that there are areas for sampling that will require the Section 7 biological opinion before those can proceed. So we're working that through with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Thank you, Mr. Buell. There's a question about Task 4.
Well, if I understood the question, I just spoke to that. That's the pre-construction survey.
It's not in the proposal. That's all. I didn't see in the proposal.
Okay. Mr. President, if I might, your board approved that work in February. So that's not part of this discussion. That was a separate discretionary action your board took earlier this year.
Thank you, Mr. Buell. Further public comment?
Lindy Owen, Los Osos. I wanted to just pass on a question from someone. If the permit condition has not been issued, the permits are not complete, and how can you bid with so many unknowns? And I guess what I come back to is I think the public doesn't really know a lot about this process, and I think this is the opportunity for maybe Bill Hildebrand to explain a little bit more the fact that Cal Poly is going to be out here taking advantage of our bad situation so that they can see what historical remnants they do find with the archaeology. And when this goes over, if this goes over, if they were to find a huge area and the expenses overrun, how is that to be paid for? I keep remembering when they were doing some of the sewer repairs in San Luis, I think last year, I believe it went 24%. The entire project shot up, I think it was 24%. And it was a many million dollar project, so it went up a lot. And if we don't know what's underneath everything. Obviously, this is more difficult than the habitat mitigation or the environmental monitoring. I'm just concerned about what will happen if we hit something huge. Do we pay for all this? Does Cal Poly contribute? Is there another fund that comes in to help cover some of those costs, or is this just another sewer cost for us?
Construction without them, but we have no reason to believe we won't get them.
Thank you. Any additional public comment? Okay, I'll bring it back to the board. Director Freiler?
I'd like just to make a brief comment on the likelihood of running into archaeological finds on the private property lateral. And I'm going to give a typical situation in Los Osos. This is not every house. This is, I would say, a majority. You have a 5-foot setback. Well, let's start with a house. A house is 25 feet setback from the property line. You can stand in front of most houses and look down the line, and every house is right on that 25-foot line. A septic tank, according to code, has to be 5 feet away from the building. Then you have an 8-foot-long septic tank. So that's 13 feet of the 25 feet are already disturbed. Beyond the septic tank, you have a leach field or leach pit. So with the 12 foot left, you have some sort of disposal field that has already been dug up. So the likelihood in the majority of the homes of finding archaeological finds in that forward 12 foot between the septic tank and the property line, I would guess, is being remote. And I think that will be found out when we come to that process. But that is the location of a majority of septic tank and leach field systems in the 25-foot setback on a typical lot in Los Osos. Therefore, it really does impact the likelihood of a significant find in that area between the tank and the property line.
Director Bauer.
And don't forget, they've already dug it up to put in the water line. Mm-hmm. They've already dug it up to put in the gas line. And they probably leveled it to put on the pad. So there's been considerable disturbance. And along with Director Freiler talking about septic and leach field, the most likely location is going to be going from the house sewer along the same pathway followed by getting out. So the probability, and as was pointed out, what we're concerned about on the private property side of the line is human remains.
Any additional board comment? Is there a motion?
Excuse me. I'd like to make the motion at this time to authorize the execution of the agreement with Far Western Archaeological Services for cultural monitoring during the construction of the wastewater project, coupled with Mr. Seitz's caveat.
Yes, it was St. Paddy's Day, and although I'm not Irish, I thought green was a good choice.
Do we have any other director comments? Agenda and scheduling. Okay.
Mr. President, bear with me a minute. There's a number of meetings coming up that I'd like to review for the community. Next Tuesday evening at the South Bay Fire Department, starting at 7 p.m., you'll have a special meeting talking again about bond costs. Your next regular board meeting will be here April 1, 7 p.m. at the South Bay Community Center. We will unveil the new wastewater treatment facility model and the graphics related to the project. Then on April 5, which is a Monday, 7 p.m. at Sunnyside School, we're going to have the program with Grover Wright on odor control, followed by April 7, that's a Wednesday, 7 p.m., that'll be at Sea Pines, And that special meeting will look at communication during construction and what we need to do to gear up to provide adequate information to the community. And then you have reset your second April meeting. That is now Monday, the 12th of April, 7 p.m. at Sunnyside. And then I want to look down the road, clear into May, and remind the community that following our bid opening, April 28th, we have called a special meeting to go over all of the wastewater project rates and charges. May 12th, it's a Wednesday, 7 p.m. at Sunnyside School.
Thank you, Mr. Buell. Sir, I hear a motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We stand adjourned.